Welcome to another episode of the What's Good Games podcast, your source for video game news, commentary, analysis, and funny stuff. I'm your host, Andrea Renee, joined once again by Miss Alexa Ray.
Hello, I escaped the blizzard.
Yes, you made it out before the bomb cyclone.
Well, no,
I was
stuck there during it.
Oh, you were lived through
that's
the bomb cyclone?
I was late getting back. Yep.
Well, we're going to have to hear all about it, but first, Miss Brittany Brombacher is also here. And Miss Christine Steimer.
Howdy.
The gang
just got off the farm.
Again.
I don't know why I said howdy.
Just got off the farm. Literally.
So what was it like living in the bomb cyclone?
It was really cold and I was really sad. It was very cold. It got down to, so Thursday, so the snow hit on Thursday and my flight was canceled and pushed out like 3 days. It was -5 degrees.
Oh.
So we got where I was, I'm from Connecticut. We got about a foot of snow. And then it froze overnight. So we had a thin sheet of ice on top of the snow. So when I went outside the next day to help my parents and my brothers like dig through it, you had to crack through like the ice shell and then get to the snow underneath to move it. And because we live in the woods, like literally in the forest, it was dead silent. It was just completely silent.
Yeah.
White, like nothing.
Just the
like
sound
I walked
of crunching,
outside, it was
like
just
crunching snow.
Yeah.
I love that though.
And it was just wind. Like before we started digging, I was standing outside and it was just the wind in the trees and the occasional like snowfall off a tree, just dead silent.
It's so great there. I remember living in North Dakota, we would have these really amazing storms too. And there would be times when I would be out late and I would be on my way home and it was like midnight or something and it would be snowing and I would just like stop outside my house before going in and just like take it all in because it's just like so quiet and like so pretty and like just like you have those moments in the winter. I don't know. Is that weird?
No, it was very peaceful.
I love that stuff too. And in Western Washington, we used to get a lot more snow and we're lucky this year. I mean, we're lucky lately if we get like a few inches of snow every year. So
we got snow on Christmas this year.
We did. And that was incredible. And it lasted a few days and then it was gone. So I don't know if we'll get any more, but I'm talking about like the 6 inches of snow that you get and you're like everyone, like the whole town shuts down and you're just like snuggled inside your house. Like those are the best.
Yeah.
Those are the best days.
Yeah. That happened on Christmas Eve in Chicago where we were spending the holidays. It snowed on Christmas Eve, which was really nice. And so we watched, White Christmas.
Yes.
Aww.
The best movie.
I had no idea it was so good. I mean, hear people talk about some of those old classic movies, but I'm more of like a Home Alone Christmas movie kind of person.
Yeah.
I'm a White Christmas
really,
all
really
the way.
No, I loved it. It's going to be part of the new tradition. Every Christmas Eve, we will now watch White Christmas.
We're going to swoon over Rosemary Clooney's wardrobe because holy shit, all of her dresses.
It's amazing.
Yes.
Those red ball gowns they wear at the end of the movie in like that big number, I was just like drooling. I was like, I need that in my wardrobe. I have no idea where I'm going to wear that thing, but I want it.
We're in college.
You're an adult?
Me and my roommate who we would watch White Christmas together. We said, I was like, I'm going to get married one day and I'm going to get married in the snow in that dress. It will never happen. But.
Oh, come on.
But that's how much we love those dresses.
Yeah, those are pretty great.
It could happen someday, Steimer. You just got to find the right tailor.
Yeah.
That's all.
It's true. That's true.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to talk about the reason we're all here, video games.
Video games.
If you guys weren't following us on Twitter at whatsgood_games, first off, we would love it if you would. Brittany does a fantastic job of running that account. I sneak in there every once in a while when she's busy, which is not very often. I mean, when she's not busy with the business. You know what I mean. Anyway, my point is, I see the face you're making, that we announced that we have a special piece of limited edition merch.
Oh, my God.
Available. Brittany, do you want to talk about this, since this is your masterpiece?
Well, first of all, it is called the Seal Bando. Sorry, hashtag Seal Bando. And good. Thank you to our friend, Hashtagonist, for creating this amazing logo. And it is a heart. Well, the outline of a seal in the middle of it, and you can get it at our store, which is what, Andrea? What's our URL? Because I forgot.
It's teespring.com/sealbandoshirts.
There we go.
For that
Thank
shirt
you.
Specifically. But if you want to get to where all of our merchandise is, including our salty emoji shirt and our What's Good logo apparel, you can go to teespring.com/stores/ What's Good Games, and that way you can see all of the offerings that we have. But it's really neat. It's cute. We have both a men's and a women's style. I would say they run pretty true to size, if not a little big for the ladies stuff, but I think I'm gonna have to order it in a couple different colors. But yeah, it's pretty cute.
You should wear one every day of the week. Yeah.
And if you're just an animal lover or a seal lover, people will never know. It's just a good shirt with shows affection for seals.
Yeah, well, somebody reached out to us on Twitter and said that she has a bunch of zookeeper friends that would be really interested in
that
shirt.
Oh, my God, yes.
That's amazing. So I looked at her profile and I was like, how does one have a bunch of zookeeper friends?
Is she also a zookeeper?
So that she works at a zoo, yeah.
I imagine it's something kind of like us. Like, it's us with, like, the video game people. I imagine zookeepers have, like, their own, like, zookeeper conventions and stuff.
I want to go. So they make friends. I want to be friends with these people.
Right?
How do I be friends with the LA zookeepers? Please, someone let me know.
Well, I mean, she's got experience wrangling reptiles. So,
I do.
I mean,
we would get along great.
I can't look at a seal video now without thinking.
No,
without thinking of you, Andrea. There was a really great one on Facebook recently where they subtitled what the seal was saying, and it sounded like he was saying egg. So he's like, egg. And I'm just like thinking of Andrea as I'm watching this seal like flop around on the ice.
Well, I'm glad that forever now, whenever anyone who listens or watches this show sees a seal,
they'll think
of Dr. Sean Chongley.
For real.
Speaking of which, if you guys ever wanted to find out about Steimer's job as a reptile wrangler and our first jobs, you can go on over and become a patron. It is a Patreon exclusive secret segment where we talked about some of our first jobs, and it was a really fun episode. If you guys are interested, that's patreon.com/whatsgoodgames. Just throwing that out there. But I think it's time that we get to some news. Now, I have quite a few pieces of news on here. We don't need necessarily talk about them all, but we're gonna touch on some of these. So the first one is Sea of Thieves, the Xbox One and PC exclusive, is going to get a closed beta. So according to GameSpot, following a technical alpha in December, developer Rare has announced the dates for its Sea of Thieves closed beta, which is scheduled to take place later this month. The closed beta will begin at 4 a.m. Pacific time on January 24th and runs until 12 a.m. Pacific time, midnight, on January 29th. Players who either join the Sea of Thieves Insider Program prior to December 1st or have pre-ordered the title will be able to access the beta, and Rare says that it isn't a sample of the full game but a tailored experience that offers a true taste of the pirate life. If you pre-ordered Sea of Thieves digitally from the Xbox store, the beta will automatically appear in your game library 24 hours before it begins. If you reserve the game at retail, you first need to redeem the code you received for the Black Dog Cosmetic Pack. Once you've done that, the beta will then likewise appear in your library the day before it starts. So, ladies, are you ready to be a pirate? We need to maybe hit up some people and see if we can get into this thing. What do you think?
So I'm in the beta because I played it late last summer. That sounds so weird to say late last summer. Like, that was 2017. Anyway,
In the closed alpha?
Yeah, in the closed alpha, and I couldn't talk about it. But, so we had so much fun playing this. That was at E3, right? Yeah,
that was E3.
Yeah.
You fired me into the ocean.
Oh my God, I was crying from laughing so hard. We had a really great time, but when I played the alpha, I had a few concerns. One of the big ones was that I didn't like having to play with other people. Because Jason and I both got into the alpha. So I just wanted to play with him, but it pairs you with other people. And the other thing was...
Like to fill out a squad? Is that what you mean?
To fill out a squad, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Thank you.
And this is squads of four, correct?
I don't know if it was squads of four at the time. I want to say I was only paired with like an extra person, so that would make three, but this was a while ago.
Four of us got to play together at E3.
Was four.
It was four. So it could have been, and the other person was like kind of MIA. Who knows? Maybe they're out drowning in the water. I don't know.
Probably.
The other issue was I wanted to explore this world, and I feel like I couldn't go anywhere without another ship coming by and blasting me into oblivion, which is, you know, I guess that's part of it, but I feel like if Rare really is building like this really cool like world, I just want to be able to get lost in it and take my time and have fun with it and not worry about getting blown to smithereens. Other than that, though, I really want this game to succeed because I had a lot of fun with it with you ladies when we played.
Yeah, that was something that I remember from our playthrough at E3 was that we were off on an adventure trying to find this specific piece of treasure, and we were all like running around together. And while we were on an island, an enemy team came by and sunk our ship while we weren't guarding it. So like this idea that you have to like leave somebody behind to watch the ship, I was like a little bit annoyed at. I was like, well, that kind of takes the fun out of going on an adventure together.
Right.
But I don't even know if somebody staying behind would have helped. Like, what is one person going to fend off an entire ship of people? I don't think so.
Because if the ship is hit, then you have to go underneath and, like, repair the holes, like, in the water coming in.
And so bail out the water.
Well, if there had been one person left behind, they would have been able to spot the other ship approaching, and they could have gotten into chat, right? Mm-hmm. And said, like, hey, everybody, like, a ship's coming. Come back to the boat and help me defend. That may have been an option.
Also, my big worry with this game is that it's going to be, like, everyone just... being an asshole. Like, my concern is that this game's gonna start and it's gonna be people teaming up and just beating up on other people. And there's this whole big world to explore. Like, they sunk our ship while the four of us were on an island trying to follow a map.
Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to find a treasure. So we were doing something. And then, you know, people came along and kind of like ruined the whole thing. So Brittany, I'm kind of with you on this. Like, I hope there's an option where like, or at least I hope everyone playing it isn't an asshole, or at least Rare has implemented some sort of incentive for not being the crew that goes around sinking everyone's ship and blasting them to smithereens.
But like, that's a pirate thing.
There has to be more than that. I know, but not like all the time. Like, I really like a lot of the other stuff like in this world and what I've seen, and I hope there's more. Like, there's funny stuff like the bananas and following the treasure map and fighting the skeletons. Getting drunk, like that's all really, really cool. But if you're constantly worried about other players coming in and like smashing up all your shit, like that's a really, like that's like anxiety triggering for me. And that's probably what would make me want to put this game down. So I hope that's not it.
It's going to depend on how easy it is. Like when you guys were worried about the ship sinking, I was like, forget about it. Leave the ship, because I feel like it needs to be easy for you to like repair it and get it back up and running. Right. Like,
but when it's at the bottom of the ocean, like
that would be, it would be like the world's most annoying game.
Yeah, I think it is easy to fast travel out of there. I think it's just more the idea if you're in the middle of the ocean, like trying to get to your destination and then you get blown apart. But it's kind of a worrying that, again, I want this game to succeed. But we're a couple months out of launch. We really don't know a heck of a lot about it. I'm sure if we were to go online and read or watch all the developer diaries, we would learn a lot more about this game. But, I mean, in a game like this, it's so niche and so different. I feel like you can't expect the people to come to your marketing materials, your developer diaries. You got to push that information out there. Like, I want to know, is there a campaign? Can I do PvE or is it only, like, PvP? Are there quests? Or is there a leveling up system? Like, what's the point? And I feel like we should know that information by now, you know, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm curious about the beta, and especially since it's, like, a tailored beta. I'm like, all right, what does that mean? We'll figure it out.
I feel like most betas are tailored experiences. It almost feels like they're going out of their way to, like, manage expectations. before the beta, the closed beta begins, and I'm trying to figure out why that would be. I think we'll find out. It would all become clear once the beta begins, which is in just a couple of weeks. So I guess we'll have to try it out and see what the deal is.
Let's do it.
Next up, GTA Online broke a record 4 years after their launch. So this story was coming from IGN. According to Rockstar, December 2017 saw more players in GTA Online than ever before, although an official player count was not released. Back in November, it was announced that GTA 5 sold in 85 million copies and is currently one of the best-selling video games of all time, ranking number one in the United States, according to NPD. The late surge is down to December's Doomsday Heist update, which added a three-act story to the online mode, with each act focusing on a large heist mission. The update included items from Red Dead Redemption 2, including a revolver that once unlocked in GTA will reward players with an alternate version in Red Dead Redemption 2, most likely in its online multiplayer mode. Given the massive success of both GTA 5 and GTA Online, it's no wonder Rockstar is bringing an online mode to Red Dead Redemption 2 when the game launches later this year. As previously said, the game will be an epic tale of life in America's unforgiving heartland. The game's vast and atmospheric world will also provide the foundation for a brand new online multiplayer experience. So,
it's weird that they're making it sound like Red Dead Redemption didn't have an online mode when it did.
It's in.
No, I think what they're saying is that it's going to be expanded from what was available in Red Dead Redemption, right? So they're going to model it off of what they were doing in GTA Online and really making it more of like an interactive playground is what it sounds like. Not to say that, you know, like you said, that there wasn't something available, but clearly the technology is so much more advanced today than when Red Dead was originally released.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you ever make up your own games in Red Dead Redemption Online?
No, I never played it.
Oh my god.
I mean, I played it for like 2 seconds. The online portion.
I played a little online.
My brother and I made up this game where when he was really small and shouldn't have been playing Red Dead Online when he did, because he's 20 now. Do the math. Where you'd find a bridge and then you'd have two players opposite on the bridge on horses. And then they'd ride the horses to the center of the bridge and you'd have to try to knock the other person and their horse off the bridge first before you met in the middle. And then if you met in the middle, you had to like crash and fight it out. We called them horse wars.
Like, were you throwing things? How are you trying to knock them off the bridge?
Throwing things, shooting them, running into them. Okay,
so just murder. It's like murder joust. Murder.
murder. The horse games, we called them.
I'm really looking forward to this. It was just a couple years ago, I want to say, that I tried to fire up the Red Dead Redemption online servers to play online with some people. And it was really buggy, but it worked. And it was really fun. I love that Western atmosphere. And obviously, GTA 5 is so freaking successful with their online multiplayer mode. I can only imagine what they're going to have for Red Dead. And I'm really excited. Really excited, guys.
I wonder if Red Dead will be able to garner the same amount of enthusiasm for its online multiplayer as GTA. Not because it's not going to be as comprehensive or as well built of a game environment, but just because of the differences in them and the style and how one is
a Western,
very modern, right? And one is like, you're on a horse. I wonder.
Yeah, it's not going to draw like the car people. Right? Sorry, I'm going to choke a little bit.
The car.
Yeah, because there's no vehicles, right?
Well, there's horses. Can't you have like Grand Theft Horse? Grand Theft Horsey?
You're not modding the horses. You're not going to like paint them different.
Maybe
colors.
You can mod the horse. Check out the saddle.
Check out my stick grill on my horse. Mane.
Put a grill on it.
They really just need to have a horse that's on fire and we'll be okay.
The abyssal horse.
Oh, there 100% will be some. I think there was an apocalypse horse in Red Dead.
The apocalypse
horse. Maybe I'm making that up, but meh.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to checking out more of that game. Haven't seen really anything other than a couple short trailers.
Just that horsey, man. Horsey and some guns.
That's a good horsey.
It's good. It's a good horsey.
Hopefully soon. Fingers crossed.
Speaking of things we have heard almost nothing about.
Great segue, Stimer. CD Projekt Red's Cyberpunk 2077 shows proof of life. Beep, beep. I found this story over on Polygon. So it's been nearly 6 years since CD Projekt Red announced it was working on Cyberpunk 2077, and exactly 5 years since The Witcher series developer revealed the game's first trailer. So that's 2013 is when we saw the last trailer for this game, folks. Understandably, fans of the studio's games and promise of a massive open world are hungry for information. So, of course, everyone freaked out. So why did they freak out about? A tweet. One single tweet from the Cyberpunk game Twitter account, and it literally just said beep.
Because it's been like 4 years, hasn't it?
They haven't tweeted in 5 years.
Yeah, like...
Yeah. That's crazy.
It's happening.
So just as a refresher, the project is a story-based RPG experience with single-player playthroughs, but we're going to add multiplayer features, they've said. It will also be open-world, sandbox-style game set in a corrupt and tech-advanced world, and the game's stated goal is to give players the freedom to explore the locations of Night City on their own terms. CDPR has promised advanced RPG mechanics based on the pen-and-paper role-playing game upgraded to match the 2077 setting. The game's setting, Night City, has been described as a diverse metropolis populated with people who speak languages from around the world, and it's considering CD Projekt Red is considering recording every character's voice in their native tongue, and the player might have to buy a translation implant in order to understand them. The quality of the translations will, of course, depend on the quality of the implant, which is kind of an interesting idea.
But, it is.
Remember, all of these ideas were, the last we heard of them was in 2013. So
forever
game,
and ever
the
ago.
The game could be completely different now.
Oh my God.
You know, this is great. I think this means maybe we'll get something at, maybe a trailer or something at GDC, the Game Developers Conference, which is happening, here in San Francisco, in March. Mm-hmm. And then I have to imagine they wouldn't just randomly put something on the Twitter account and then make us wait till E3, right? Stimer, do you have any insight onto this project?
I can't talk about anything, so you should ask someone else.
Dang.
So the other noteworthy thing about this tweet is that the trailer was revealed 5 years ago on January 10th. So it had some sort of planning to it. I love CD Projekt Red. I love The Witcher series, one of my favorite of all time. I'm curious, because typically when games have a futuristic city setting, they just lose me completely. But I'm sure CD Projekt Red will have a killer narrative in this game, and I'm hoping that'll be enough to hold my interest. That's my only concern. Like androids and like cities and buildings, like there's just no escapism there for me. So not that.
But
I
are you looking forward to Detroit?
Life.
I love the sci-fi.
I am, but that's purely like narrative. It's more of like the sandbox city sort of atmosphere where I have my freedom to go do whatever I want. That I look around and I'm like, okay, I'm uninspired. I would have to stick purely to the main campaign missions. But yeah.
So Brittany, you don't like trees. And you don't like cities. What do you like?
No trees, no cities. Rolling green hills and dragons and orcs and trolls and that kind of shit.
Rolling empty green hills.
And zombies.
And zombies.
Yeah, rolling empty green hills.
But rolling
really
green hills filled with zombies.
And zombies. Yes. Medieval zombie game. That's what I need in my life. Oh. Someone do this.
Mm-hmm.
What? That would be scarier because you wouldn't have guns.
Right. You have to use like maces and swords and shit. I'm all about
crossbows.
This. Oh, yeah.
I'm excited for this because, well, like, again, like you, Brittany, I don't venture, like, sci-fi, like, it's either hit or miss. Either it's, like, Star Wars and you hook me because there's that weird, stupid, weird magic semi-weeaboo samurai thing to it with the lightsabers. Or you go, like, so technical and so sci-fi that it's, like, I don't know. But... The Witcher series, I've nerdy for narrative, and they did such a good job with that story and with all of their side quests, everything, every little thing you did felt meaningful. So I'm super excited to see something else from the studio.
Yeah.
Even if it's cyberpunky. So very excited for this game. Those were all my trigger words.
I wish it was called cyberpunky.
Cyberpunky.
We can call it cyberpunky.
It sounds so cute.
Well, we'll obviously keep you guys posted once we hear more, but now to keep your eyes peeled.
Brittany, Google Dead Crusade. It's a zombie medieval RPG.
Oh.
It's like all of her trigger words.
Oh, yep. Yeah. That's it. Is
What's the name of it again?
It's called Dead Crusade.
Dead Crusade. It's an Unreal 4 game.
Unreal 4.
I'm looking.
Yeah, and then there's something called Undead Nights.
Oh, girl.
Girl, go.
Dead Crusade is a medieval co-op horror game. Done.
It's co-op? Done. Jesus, done. That's like everything stream you want.
You end this podcast now. I'm out of here.
Goodbye, everybody. This is a great show. Just kidding. Next story. Changes to Xbox achievements have been discovered. So what's interesting about this is we put this story in the rundown for this week's show, and then Xbox announced new features, but they didn't quite announce what was discovered by Windows Central, which is intriguing. So Eurogamer reports that Microsoft is developing a new system to track your overall accomplishments on Xbox, currently dubbed your career. The first details of the system have been uncovered by the reliable Windows Central. The discovery backs up previous comments made by Xbox exec Mike Ybarra, where he hinted at something similar in the pipeline. The in-development feature currently looks like it is organized around levels with quests for XP and rewards when you level up. These rewards include loot crates with cosmetic items for your Xbox avatar. Code relating to the unannounced feature suggests that you'll rack up experience points and collect crates simply by playing specific games and unlocking achievements. Now, Microsoft already runs quests for using Xbox via other external schemes like the feedback app and the rewards program, but your career would presumably bake a similar and more overarching version of those into your console itself. So the report follows Ybarra's tease from last summer that Microsoft was working on a way to reflect your playtime and accomplishments better than the current achievement system. Ybarra previously said there's actually bigger, more bolder changes that we have in mind. We can do a lot more to reflect and let people show their gaming history and their status. So I think this is kind of cool. So the thing that Xbox announced today was that mini game hubs are coming to the guide, and that you can put up your do not disturb online status, which is something that we heard about last week, and that they're addressing some user feedback about inactivity shutdown options, basically like a bunch of other things that weren't this, which is intriguing.
Right.
I thought for sure that they were going to be like, and we've confirmed it, but they didn't. All they said was, we're excited to return in 2018 with new features that impact the way you access your games and achievements.
The one achievement-related thing they did announce, I'll read this straight from the news.xbox.com website. Insiders enrolled in the Alpha Ring will receive the latest Xbox One system update. And with this update, you will be able to use the next achievements feature in the guide, which enables you to view and store a cross-game list of upcoming achievements. Easily see which achievements you are closest to and quickly launch the game to obtain them. Sort filters allow you to prioritize next achievements by closest, most common, rarest, most common rare, and highest gamer score.
Huh.
I mean, I don't care about achievements, but I'm sure if you're someone like Stemalot over here who probably likes the Chivos.
I mean, I like them, but, like, I'm not going to do that.
You don't care?
I mean, I've cared less as I've gotten older. I cared a lot. If you told me this, like, 5 years ago, I would have been like, oh, my God, this is amazing.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you, Steimer. My gamer score was a big point of pride for me during the 360 era. I loved getting as many achievements as possible, to the point where I didn't even know what the trophy system was on PlayStation because I was all about the Chivos. But now that I'm more in the PlayStation ecosystem, I don't feel like I'm as attracted to trophies as I was to gamer score, and I'm not quite sure why. I think it's because I like the idea of all of my progress being cumulative and that my gamer score is a total sum of all of the achievements across all of my games instead of getting individual trophies per game. I know you can, like, at the top of your profile or whatever, counts all of your trophies, but I don't know. It just didn't have the same feel to it.
Yeah, no, I agree. But then again, I also did the thing where I was on 360 for a really long time and then started switching over to PlayStation. But I think, and I wonder if trophies killed it for me. Like, I mean, I still have a lot of trophies, but it's just age. I don't know which it was. I can't.
We're all old now.
I don't know.
Something I'm looking forward to, and it's a really simple thing, and I'm surprised that hasn't been done, is the do not disturb feature. Because when I...
Why are you looking forward to that?
Because back in the day...
She likes to hide from us.
No. Back That's in the true. Day, I gave out my gamer tag just publicly, which is fine. But it became to the point where when I would sign on, I would be hit up with, you know, like half a dozen requests to play a game, or I'd be in the middle of a cutscene and a notification would pop up. So I would turn off the notification, but then I felt bad because I felt like people thought I was ignoring them. And so, you know, there are times when, no, Steimer, don't point at yourself.
You're ignoring us.
Girl, no. So I'm just looking forward to it so people know. It's like, I'm not purposefully ignoring you. It's like, it's not that I don't want to, like, chat with you, or it's not that I don't appreciate the game or invite. It's just, like, right now I'm in the middle of, like, a single-player campaign narrative thing, and I just don't, I'm not online to play with other people. That's all. It's a nicer way of, like, you know, doing it. If that makes sense.
You're so nice. I just ignore people.
You're going to be like that person who would always be logged into AIM as invisible. And you're like, what's the point? Why are you even here?
Brittany,
exactly what she's never going to take the do not disturb sign on.
No. Nope.
She's going to put that sucker on and it's never coming off.
Assholes. Y'all are assholes. But I love you all.
We're not assholes, Britt. We just are desperate for your affection. Okay?
We really are.
We're
starved over here.
Well, no, I kind of get it because I don't like playing with people either, but still.
Well, when Destiny 2 came out earlier this year, we intentionally were trying to fire team up. Oh my gosh, it is last year. It's 2018 now. we were intentionally trying to play together, and we couldn't send her. We kept sending her messages and PS party invites
and
we
text
texting,
messages,
dead
and Facebook
world.
Messages.
Yes,
mea culpa.
Exactly. We did not try smoke signals or
see, that's time. Why you didn't show me that you wanted my affection. Right? You gotta try harder next time, Stammer.
You gotta get a pigeon.
Yeah, courier pigeon.
I was gonna go with a raven because a raven's a little
you can name
cooler.
It Peeper.
Oh my god,
she'll pay attention to that.
That's true. If we sent a pigeon with a name tag that said Peeper, she
would
never leave our side. She'd be like, I'll make sure you don't die, Peeper.
They figured it out. My secret has been exposed.
Okay, so for the last bit of news to chat about, this is kind of an interesting one. So not really like a newsy story in the traditional sense, but the IGDA conducts an annual survey, and they found some I don't know if troubling is the right word.
Casually upsetting. It's
yes.
Casually upsetting.
Yes, it is casually upsetting, but also worth discussing. They found that diversity is not increasing in game development. So according to a 2017 developer satisfaction survey, which is done every year by the nonprofit, the International Game Developers Association, it found 81% of developers feel diversity in the workplace is important, but most of them don't believe the industry has become any more diverse in the past 2 years. A large percentage of game developers are white or multiracial, with white 71% according to the IGDA, and a disproportionate number are men 79%. 86% of those are heterosexual, and most are married or in long-term relationships without children. Among those that work for companies with diverse equality policies, only 56% said that those policies were adequately enforced. When asked what the industry needed to do to succeed in the future, about one-fifth of the respondents said more diversity in the games it produces is a priority, the second most selected option after advancement in game design. The IGDA also highlighted some of its findings around job insecurity, too. Nearly 40% of the developers expect to be at their current employer for 3 years or less, with one-fifth saying they didn't know how long their current job would last. 27% of the developers have worked for 3 to 5 employers in the last 5 years, with the majority of respondents having spent less than 10 years in game development as a whole. Now we're seeing, according to Jen McLean, the interim executive director of the IGDA, she said, we're seeing high rates of turnover and concerns about job stability. Combined with the lack of support for equality and diversity in the workplace, these results confirm the IGDA's belief that the organization must act to help game development create fulfilling, sustainable careers. Developers were also asked which company was most desirable to work for, as a sidebar. For the first time in 4 years, which company do you guys think won?
Blizzard.
Well, I mean, we can see it. On.
Yeah.
I was going to give...
I didn't look. I didn't look, am I right?
I was
going
to give the audience a beat to think of an answer, but yes, it's Blizzard.
Holy shit. It's because Overwatch that... Freaking Overwatch Bank.
Interestingly.
The Bank of Overwatch.
They won for the first time in 4 years. I'm sorry, let me read this better. For the first time in 4 years, Blizzard beat out Valve for the top spot with 8% of the vote. Valve took second place, with Nintendo coming in third and Bethesda coming in fourth.
Well, Valve only makes one game, and it's Dota.
They don't know.
Left for dead. I mean, sometimes
they also have Team Fortress,
right? But like, when was the last time Valve put out a new game?
Yeah, I mean they're more of a platform service now.
Right. Right.
True.
But
they also have CS:GO.
Yes.
That's not new.
For a second,
it's not new, but it's actively played by millions of people.
Right. Well, I feel like Blizzard won because Overwatch is not only incredibly popular and everybody loves it, so everyone wants to work on it. And two, that game also has so much representation in the actual game. I can't imagine that team isn't diverse as heck. So I can see why it's been an attractive get or an attractive move for a lot of people. Also, they're hiring like crazy. I opened my Facebook 2 days ago and 10 of my friends now work for Blizzard in some capacity. Blizzard taking everyone. Taking all those people.
They're just here, all of my children.
Think of Overwatch.
Everybody.
It's not just Overwatch, but yeah.
No, I know.
All of their shit's pretty successful.
But Overwatch has that kooky, crazy, amazingly dedicated and rabid fan base. So they're in the spotlight.
Well, and it's particularly at the forefront right now because you've got Owl starting up the Overwatch World League, which is getting a lot of attention from a lot of people. I think Overwatch is going to hopefully be a good jumping off point for people who weren't previously interested in esports to maybe take a look at the competitive professional video game scene. I know that I have talked about how I thought it would be great for a game Rocket League to maybe be that gap, that bridge where people could say, hey, I understand that game. It's just 3v3. It's cars playing soccer, right? That's an easy game to follow. Overwatch is not as easy to follow. There's quite a few things happening on screen, but it's not StarCraft, right? It's not something that is so intricate like RTS or a MOBA Dota or League, where there's just so many moving parts happening at once that it's just impossible to follow if you don't play the game at all. But
I would think CS:GO is a better CS:GO is pretty straightforward.
True.
One team wins, great, easy. Didn't have to think about it.
It's definitely easier to follow. I just find it a little repetitive.
Sure. I think the only reason Overwatch doesn't feel repetitive, though, is because there's so much visual flair and so many different characters. But that comes with when you add that layer of complexity, then that's also the barrier at some point, right? Because people are like, what is that? What did that person freeze someone? What's going on? She has ice powers? What?
That's May, right?
Yeah.
The girl with the hoodie, with the furry hoodie.
Furry did we play Overwatch one time for a patron exclusive?
We did.
We did.
Yes.
Okay,
the Slimer
Alexa, did
killed
you play
everyone.
That?
No,
I thought you played. You played a couple.
I didn't.
Of played.
No, I didn't. We because Slimer killed everyone, so we just let her keep killing everyone.
Oh, okay,
because
that
it was
like a blur.
It was effing incredible. She was like, "I've never played Overwatch." Everyone's dead.
I was the perfect level of drunk to play Overwatch, not
Overwatch
too drunk,
savant,
just
if
drunk
you will.
Enough to be like, "I got this," and then I was good.
That was fun.
It was fun. We'll have to pick it up again. Well, that's gonna wrap it up for our news segment for this week. When we come back after the break, we'll have some hands-on impressions. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I have made good on my promise and made a game that I told Alexa Ray that I was going to play. And then after that, don't forget, The Life is Strange Before the Storm, episode 3, spoiler cast. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Everybody, this is the What's Good Games podcast. So we have been playing some video games. Steimer has been doing some adult life things,
how dare you,
relearning to play her flute. How's that been going, Steimer?
It's been going better than expected, actually.
Can we start a band?
How did you play before you picked it back up?
4.5 years ish. And so I took my flute back here with me from home, had my dad like take it off the top shelf. I was like, I can't even reach it. It's so far away. It's a little tarnished. It's a little rusty, but I relearned the B flat scale successfully and relearned part of a song that I had been teaching myself by ear. Like, I just have a clip of a song in my head that I think is from Sailor Moon.
Yes.
And
yes.
I cannot figure out what the actual melody is. I actually went searching on YouTube like the other day, just down the rabbit hole, trying to find this friggin' song, couldn't find it. So maybe, I don't know. I'm trying to learn it enough so that I can put a portion of it on Twitter and then have Twitter help me figure out what the song is.
That's awesome.
What?
You don't hum it? You don't have the clip of the song?
No, it's in my head.
Can you hum it?
No. I'll do it for you. I'm not on podcast.
Because I probably, know.
You're putting her under pressure.
I own every Sailor Moon, like, character image song and soundtrack CD. I can probably help you figure out what that song is.
Yes, girl. All right.
Sailor Moon nerds.
Figure that out.
Amazing. I'm not surprised whatsoever.
But let's start a band. You play flute. Okay. I play piano. Brittany, what do you play?
I played the clarinet in fourth grade.
Okay, clarinet.
I played both the French horn and the viola.
So we'll have we can either have like a bunch of woodwind instruments and a piano, or
I'd prefer to go with the horn. It would be easier to pick up.
Because
let me tell you, learning strings is really difficult.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah.
What's her name, Simon?
the next time someone contacts us on Spotify about our songs, we have a song ready to go.
So the inside track on that is that I tweeted about an email that we received at contact@whatsgoodgames.com. Of course, you guys can email us there. It's our public email address, and we sometimes will get people reaching out to us wanting to work with us on certain things. And sometimes we get these very like boilerplate emails from companies, which are like super obvious that it's just like they swapped out the name and we're part of some kind of mailing list. And let me actually see if I can, pull it up right now.
I was like, oh my God.
It came from a woman who I won't call out, but she works for a company.
Didn't she message us through SoundCloud?
No, she found us on SoundCloud.
Oh, that's what it was. That's right.
Yes, no, it was a message through SoundCloud.
Well, then I don't know what I'm talking
about. It was like we took a look at your songs, and I'm like, what?
Oh my God.
Our songs?
Like, what songs are you talking about?
Oh,
songs,
yeah, here it is. Okay. It says, how's it going, What's Good Gains? I was just surfing through SoundCloud, and I found your page. I heard a few of your songs. It was really surprised. I'm actually a talent rep for blank, 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 and I'd like to help you get your page greater exposure. This could be a great chance for you to grow your following. Shoot me an email, and we could talk more about this.
Never see. Oh, maybe so,
I really want you.
The
to
last
email
seal
her
prize
back.
Is going to be our
Should
first
I email
song.
Her back?
The last seal prize.
And be like, so we have a couple seal demos. Prize.
Never seal it coming. Andrew and Horm.
So good.
So good.
I think this is really the best idea we've had.
I know. We're really in the wrong industry. What the hell?
Find your clarinet, Brittany. We're doing it. Okay. Let's go. Or like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
I
have one of my best friends is a professional French horn player, an actual legit French horn player. She played in the Family Guy band. I could maybe see if she could bring her horn up so I don't have to like rent one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She would
then, like
borrow it.
Let's do it.
It'd be fun.
Oh man.
Never seal it.
Okay. So back to the show. Hold on. I lost my page here. So you have been playing, you haven't been playing anything besides Life is Strange. I see you finished a couple books.
Yeah, I finished Girl in Snow, which is a mystery novel about a teenage girl that gets murdered because, why wouldn't I read about that?
So that's why Alexa's Snow story creeped you out a little bit. Girl in Snow.
Honestly, no. It was more of like the silence. I understand that silence can either be comforting or creepy. It goes one of two ways. And then I started American Gods by Neil Gaiman last night, and I'm already in love with it.
The book is kooky.
What is that book about?
American Gods.
No, I mean, oh my gosh. So it's about a man named Shadow. If I believed in violence, I would maybe violate you right now.
Oh dear.
Whoa.
With my hand to your face.
I've been violated.
It's about a guy named Shadow.
Is this workplace harassment? Where's HR? Are you HR too?
Yes.
I'd like to file a complaint against you.
I'm going to tell a story about her book, Alexa Ray.
He spent 3 years in jail. He's about to get out, and they let him out a couple days early because, sad news bears, his wife and his best friend die on the same day in a car accident. So yikes. He's sort of like lost trying to go back to, he's trying to go back home, but he obviously doesn't have a direction anymore. Cause he was only thinking of his wife, like throughout those 3 years, and like, I can't wait to get back to her. And then he meets a guy on this plane called, well, he calls himself Mr. Wednesday. He's a weird, mysterious character. And this guy offers him a job. And then I assume hijinks will ensue. I'm just like at the part where he's met Mr. Wednesday and like he hasn't agreed to work for him yet. So, yeah.
Mr. Wednesday.
It's a but really just,
like,
good
his,
book.
His writing style is really intriguing and I like it. I like the writing a lot.
Yeah.
Grabs you.
It's a book about, but also it's a book about like religion and faith. You haven't gotten to those parts
I haven't
yet,
gotten to
but
that
it's
part
very
yet.
Like, it's very heavily about that. And when you figure out like what American Gods means, it's like, what? Like, it's cool.
Say what?
Like it's a great book.
Situation.
What?
Like a mind blown situation.
Yes. It's a really, really good book. And AMC, I think, just finished season one of a show based on it.
Yeah. There's a Stars show.
I'm afraid to watch it. Oh yeah. Stars did it.
I only know that because they ruined the book cover by putting a fucking stamp on it that says, now a star series. And I'm like, I don't care.
Oh,
can you
no.
not?
Summer, I'm proud of you for, you know, you said you wanted to do this in the last podcast and you're doing
it. I did.
It.
I am. I'm
good reading girl. Books.
Well, because I had the first week, I need to figure out balance a little bit better because yeah. I did the first weekend where I only played Assassin's Creed and did nothing else. And then I had a weekend where I just didn't play any games because I was trying to like do other things. So I need to like mix the two together. And have weekends where I do a little column A and a little column B.
Yes. Healthy.
I think that sounds like a great plan.
Yes.
Brittany, you have been playing a very interesting mix of games.
Yeah,
I'm looking at this list going,
girl.
I don't think we need to talk more about Zelda because we've talked a lot about Zelda.
Goodbye forever.
But I see that you've been playing Xenoblade Chronicles 2. How's that going?
I have. I'm only like 8 or so hours into it. And that's one of my resolutions for 2018 is to get back to JRPGs. Cause that's like my bread and butter. Like that's what I grew up playing for the longest time. And
my
unfortunately,
girl.
I've kind of neglected the genre cause they take like 100 hours and I'm like, ain't nobody got time for that. So I've been trying to play more. I'm looking forward to Lost Sphere coming later this month. So yes, Xenoblade Chronicles 2. It's interesting now that I'm playing a JRPG again because it's hard for me to resonate with such like young characters, you know, like the appearance of a JRPG, like super like cartoony and all young and oh my gosh, the power of friendship will save everything. And it's like, come on. But this game has really hooked me so far with the narrative. It's not all super like it has its cheesy moments, but I think there's some deep shit going on that I'm looking forward to uncovering. The UI, like Alexa said, is cuckoo bananas. There's like a million. I feel like every hour that passes, they like introduce a new icon on the screen.
Yep.
And this is like, right? And it's like, okay, so this is another thing I have to take care of. But I'm letting myself just kind of like get lost in this fantasy world. And so far, I'm really enjoying it. I mean, 8 hours in JRPG term is like infancy. So like,
yeah,
I still
like,
know
scratch.
Yeah, that's like 2 minutes in a normal game.
But that's an interesting point you had about like, the power of friendship, and all this, and I just start to think, everyone in a JRPG is like 12 years old. Like, and I just,
well, 14.
Yeah, you know, like,
I think it's 15,
or take.
I was kind of trying to think, Alexa, is there anything that has adults in it? Like, were you,
well, Final Fantasy
like an
15,
adult story?
If you
they're
want
not
to
adults.
Count that.
Yeah, I guess two of them are.
Yeah, they're like 21.
Oh, really?
20s,
seems
whatever.
Like a baby.
He's 20.
Ravis is like 25 or something. I don't know. The day I woke up and realized that I was like, I think when I turned 25 or 23 or something, I tweeted like, I'm officially too old to be a Final Fantasy protagonist. And the responses I got were like, Auron is 33. Waka is 30. And that's the, Bosch is like 33. Final Fantasy 12, Final Fantasy 10, Final Fantasy 12, Final Fantasy 13, Saz is like 35. So I think the cutoff is like 35.
Okay. So I've got a couple more years.
But you can't, but the thing is the characters are either like 19 or they're 30. There's like no mid, there's no late
20s. The 20s do not exist.
The late 20s do not exist because either you're a 19-year-old or you're an old 30, or you're old. You're 35 and you're old. And you have children or something.
Andrew, like, I feel like the 35-year-olds look like 3 or 30.
I know, but Final Fantasy is rude and awful. Continue.
I was just saying they look like, even though they're 35 or whatever, I feel like they end up, the art makes them look like 50 years old.
Well,
sometimes. Not every character, but sometimes I feel like they say that they're younger and you're like, are you? you just had a rough life.
I will never forget Final Fantasy X. Orin is 32, I think, and he has gray. His hair is totally gray. Oh. And I'm like, God damn it.
I would have thought he would have been so much older than that. That kind of boggles my mind that he's 32.
He was also dead the entire time, but that's semantics. Anyway. Oh my gosh. Final Fantasy joke.
So Brittany.
Yeah.
Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
Wait, what? I didn't hear what you said. Oh, Xenoblade Chronicles 2. Yeah, basically, I am really enjoying it. It feels good to get, like, back into, like, JRPGs. The hard part for me, like I said, is just kind of, like, letting go. Because I love mature themes. I'm a lot older, even when I was younger. Like, more, like, games that aren't afraid to go there. Because I feel like that's more realistic in the sense. But it's more like the power of friendship. Oh, my God, we can do anything together. Look how awesome we are. It's like that kind of takes me out of it. But I'm trying to, like, chill out and revert about 10 years and get into it. Alexa, is that a deterrent for you at all? Or are you, like, totally into that? Like, super cheesy, like, oh, my God, we can do this together kind of attitude.
You are talking to someone whose favorite series of all time is Kingdom Hearts.
Well, but, okay, yeah, but you grew up playing that. So I'm not sure if that's because you have, like, residual nostalgia.
Yes, yes. No, I grew up playing these, too. Like, you, I was, you know, I was playing the big long JRPGs while all my friends were like playing Halo or whatever. Nobody understood me. Because I was like,
I didn't understand because the power of friendship.
Because that's the point in my life. Like, JRPGs ruined me emotionally because that's how I learned to be like an emotional, gummy, gooey, like lovey dovey, schmoopy person. Like, that's where it came from. Because every JRPG is like, Final Fantasy IX says it best, like, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. There's always people here. You're together. Your friends, Sora, quote from Kingdom Hearts, my friends are my power. They're all like that. It's about, like, being able, a lot of those games are about leaning on other people and learning that, like, work towards a common goal, even though you don't see eye to eye, you can still find a way to work together, blah, blah, blah. So, like, yeah, that's a totally freaking appeals to me. And I'm about 10 hours in Xenoblade. I didn't get a chance. I'm not... haven't played more of it because I had some gaming duties over break, but I really like what they're doing with Xenoblade. I needed that fun kooky romp, like, mm-hmm. like you were saying.
Yeah.
It's refreshing. It's palate cleanser.
Since we're talking about
oldest
JRPGs,
Final Fantasy characters. Oh.
I kind of want Andrea to tell us about her beginnings in JRPG land.
So I had an experience.
You did.
With a Japanese role-playing game. Yes.
Laguna from Final Fantasy VIII is 44. He's the oldest one.
Oh my gosh. So I was playing another of these games with a bunch of young characters called Final Fantasy IX.
Woo! One of the characters is 6 years old. Did you know that? She's six.
That's ridiculous. Nobody who's six should be gallivanting around doing things.
And writing love notes.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Oh, so awkward.
So I don't know what's going on, and it's weird. And I think it was a mistake to name the characters and not keep their given names.
Oh no! What did you name them?
I didn't realize what I had done until afterwards, and I was like, "Ooh, I probably should have just kept."
Did you name Zidane a girl?
So the first kid.
Oh my god! I can't wait. Oh my god!
I named JT. So that's Zidane, I think.
Zidane is JT?
That's basically the biggest crush I've ever had in my life.
Like Justin Timberlake. And then I named Vivi MJ, like Michael Jackson.
Oh my god.
And then the next character was Steiner, and I named him the Hoff. like did that. We named going for a pop star theme.
We named Steimer Steiner Steiner.
Why
we named him
name
ass
me?
Butt. I think I like yours better.
I love you so much, you precious angel.
It's in dialogue scenes, since it's all in text, if you're like me and you've never played this game before, there is no VO, there's no voices, it's just all text. Having everything come up as the Hoff said is pretty great.
Wow.
So, I'm just a little bit into the game. I just did the first battle sequence in the Evil Forest.
Ooh.
And... It's, yeah, it was. I died three times before I kind of figured out what I needed to do. I didn't realize that you're supposed to steal from everybody you battle until just now. Cause I had to look up a walkthrough as to like how to beat this fight. Cause I kept dying so quickly. I was like, I don't understand. And then I was like, okay, I think I figured out what potions are, but they don't tell you what the potions do. And then I picked up a couple pieces of armor, but I don't know how to equip them.
Oh no!
I've been like, the menu system
are you
is
naked?
Very confusing.
You're all in clothing.
The only thing that changes is your weapon.
So I don't really know what's going on, and then I see that there's like a sword art ability, and then I see that there's like some magic, and that I can run away. I fleed. That was my ability, so I hit flee, and then I just like left the fight, and I was like, can I do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I clearly need a little assistance, but it's good that I started on my own to have like the experience of playing the game without anybody telling me what to do and figuring it out.
Oh my God.
But it's complicated in a way that I'm like, this shouldn't be that difficult because it seems pretty simple. And why does every battle have to have that music? Like it's some big, like some big thing is happening. And I'm like, it's just like a random like fox thing that I found in the forest that I'm fighting. And
yeah,
like the music starts up and I'm just like, I don't have time for this. And I fled.
I love that music so much.
I mean, it's great battle music.
Oh, it's so good.
I just like the level up sound.
Yeah.
I don't think I've gotten that sound yet.
To be fair,
if you won a battle, you've definitely heard it.
Go easy on yourself, because these are Final Fantasy IX uses the staple JRPG turn-based formula, the equipment system. Like, if you have never played a game like that before, I can totally understand why it would seem complicated and confusing. To like Alexa and I don't know if Simon, if you've ever played JRPGs back in
the day. We're like experts here, though.
It's a lot. You're not used to that.
I've played similar type games, and like a complicated menu system isn't something that I'm afraid of. I think the thing that I've been frustrated with is that they don't tell me what each of the individual items does. Like if I like hover over a potion or a high potion, it doesn't tell me like what's the difference. And the fact that the people you're battling don't have hit points.
Nope.
Like, how am I supposed to know which item I'm supposed to use or which potion I'm supposed to use? It's turn-based. I need to know, like, how many hit points you have or how I'm going to die.
You know you're done when you're done.
No, I don't like that. But I have hit points. I don't know.
Are you sure that there's no explanation for the items? Like, it might be one of those things where you have to hover over and push, like, square or another item. Because I think the regular potions heal, like, what, 100? And a high potion heals, like, 300? Like that? Okay.
Or it's like
so
50,
there's probably
100.
Like a toggle button that will tell you. Because that would suck if you don't know what these things do. That would make it very complicated.
I will sit down with you after we record and I will go through this with you.
I'm sure maybe that's it. Maybe it's a button prompt that I'm missing. I'm sure somebody listening right now is like, Andrea, oh my gosh, you're an idiot. Why didn't you just hit this? I've played through this whole game on PS4. This is how you play. So we're going to figure it out. But I wanted to let you know that I've started it. It's clearly shows its age, and OMG is the like the sexism just rampant in that game in a way that I was like, yep, this game is like 20 years old. Everything about the girl characters are like, yeah, but she's so pretty. Oh, look at how cute she is. Oh, I don't really want to go save Garnet, but you know, she's really pretty, so I should go save her. And
what
I'm
did
like,
you rename
Whoa.
Her?
I haven't gotten the chance to play as her
okay.
yet.
Yeah, Zidane's a playboy.
Yeah. He's a little horn dog.
Yeah, well, he's not the only one. The Hoff said it too.
The Hoff.
Well, he's the Hoff. Of course he did.
The guy in the armor. Also, why is he wearing armor shorts?
Because
his knees are exposed and his elbows are exposed. I'm like, man, if you're going to wear a suit of plate, if that's going to be your costume,
like, it's like wouldn't female you have armor. Like, doesn't make
wouldn't
sense.
You have knee coverings on
he's
your,
only worried your... about his internal organs.
Look, look, you're playing be a like Final Fantasy game.
On his stubs of knees.
No one is ever wearing anything that makes any sense or will protect them in any capacity whatsoever.
No.
Okay.
I'm surprised he doesn't have any weird scraps of fur or extra belts hanging off of him.
Doesn't he have a feather and that's like it coming out of his hat?
Yeah, he's got a feather in his hat and that's it.
That's pretty magical
feather. This Queen Brane or whoever.
Yeah, Queen Bran.
She's a hot nightmare mess. Oh my gosh. Is she like supposed to be like not human? Yes. Is Garnet her actual like blood daughter?
Just keep playing.
Like she looks like some kind of monster.
All of your questions will be answered. Just keep playing. Have you met? Wait a minute. She hasn't met Kuja yet, right?
I don't think
No. She just got out of the forest, so.
Oh man, Kuji Ku. Kuji.
Yeah. So.
Kuji.
Sorry.
Kuji Ku.
Oh my god. So it's, good. Oh yeah, wait till you meet Kuja. That'll change
Oh god,
the world.
I can't wait to see him play.
I have to admit though, I have to force myself to sit down and play it.
Oh my god. Now I want to replay it.
I know, me shit. Too, Alexa.
I have so many things I have to play and like Lost Sphere, we get Lost Sphere like next week.
Yeah.
And but like,
you would probably run through it relatively quickly. You're not like me who I'm just like stumbling around, like looking in every single corner because I like don't know where any of the chests are or anything. No, you would think it's good, but like the problem is like this is a very old game. So there's lots of portions of like the walkable surface that literally have nothing there. You're just like they make that little noise like with every like footstep they take just walking around the you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. But that was a great impression.
Oh my God.
There are some moments in Final Fantasy IX that I can't wait for you to get to because I know you're going to be just like, what the fucking fuck is this?
Oh, yeah.
Can't wait.
I've already said that so many times.
I can't wait. Oh, my God.
No matter
what
happens if you hate the game, I'm very proud of you for trying something new.
Thank yes. you. I'm yes. doing my best. I'm
yes.
trying to expand my horizons.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. Alexa Ray.
Hi. Speaking of horizons.
Yes. Another great segue. You finished the game, but you wrote in the show notes that you were disappointed in the ending.
Yes.
So before we continue, ladies, do we want to have a spoilery discussion about the ending or do we want to keep it spoiler free?
Brittany, have you played it?
I haven't. I can take off the headphones and just watch you ladies.
No. Let's keep it a spoiler.
Well, then I don't know if I can talk about it because I have some very, very specific.
So we have a year, typically like a year policy, right? So Horizon released February 28th. Whatever that's
So how
like.
About we'll make a deadline, Brittany, that you have to finish Horizon before then.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah,
that's
totally okay. Fair. Fire under your ass.
So then I'll be as vague as I can.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So.
Unless you don't want to talk about it, we can talk about something else.
No. We can talk about it. I played 27 games over break.
That's a lot.
Because I was a judge for the Dice Awards this year.
Damn girl.
Brittany, I played Divinity. I played about 15 hours of Divinity Original Sin. I think I'm going to go back and finish it. It's really good.
Yay!
I haven't found Peeper yet, though. I want to find Peeper. So I played very many games and my brain was bleeding and I told myself my reward for getting through all my dice games was I'm going to finish Horizon with my boyfriend who I played with. We played this together and we did a bunch of side stuff. We did almost all the side stuff, got the super kooky Weaver armor that I love.
It's the best.
Did all the side quests, checked in. And before you go to like the final suite or whatever you want to call them of boss things, you can't go back after that. So there's a point that's like, go back or like stay. And there's all these options to like go in and check on all the people that Aloy has helped throughout the game. We chose to do that. I thought a lot of the side stuff was wrapped up really, really nicely. I thought that a lot of the conflict in the individual places was wrapped up really nicely. I felt like everything, like every question asked answered itself. So going into the end of the game, I was like, so this game succeeded in having a really great story in that it's not leaving me with like, any major questions other than like, what's up with this other tribe, which I guess is what the Frozen Wilds is about. The Banuk?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it answered all those questions. I felt like empowered and I felt really close to the world. And I was like, I know this place. I love this place. I have a couple of weird, like, just a suspension of disbelief questions about it that I'll get to after Brittany plays her game and we can do our spoiler cast, about it. But I'm like, okay, let's go. We're going to do the thing. And for me, a game, even if I love it, even if I absolutely love the game, can be made or broken for me by a lame boss ending. And
like the actual boss fight itself, or like the resolution of your interaction with the boss,
the entire thing. Both. Like you could have a lame boss fight and like a really crazy cutscene that's like, oh, okay. But if your interaction with the boss is kind of like, oh, okay, then it kind of throws me off. Like I had a lot of issues. I had some issues with the way that 15's ending started. And then the middle was really great. The sequence of boss fights that you have. And then the ending cutscene just really confused the hell out of me. But in the end, it was like the way the actual battle that I had, the way that the combat was balanced and the way that it forced you to use all the tools in your toolbox to get through it is what made it something for me. And that's what I think a good final boss or set of final bosses in some games have, like one or two, or if you're Kingdom Hearts, like six. six or seven at the end. A final boss or a final challenge or whatever it is, if your game has that, should challenge you, should put something in front of you that you have all the tools to do, but should also challenge you to use all of those tools or think about using all of those tools. It's supposed to be a summation of the challenges that you have overcome and the things you have faced. And it should be something that makes you feel like, It should be something that feels like it's high stakes and that feels epic. Because if you're coming to like the climax of a story and you've been like in Horizon Zero Dawn fighting to basically save the world from ending again, what you're facing and what you are led to think you'll be facing, I think you know what I'm talking about, throughout the entire game, mm-hmm. I was prepared for that. I was like, this is the thing I'm going to have to fight. And when I stocked up and I equipped myself and I looked at what I had, before I started that final sequence, I was like, okay, if this is what I think it is, then I'm probably going to need these. I want to make sure I have all of this. And that's what I prepared for. I prepared for the showdown with this thing that's been sort of the player behind the scenes threatening the whole game, like the ultimate big bad, basically. And what the ending is you have this really amazing boss. Like there's basically like three segments. And the first one, I was like, okay, this makes sense for a first segment. And then the next segment in like the boss things escalated the threat and felt more threatening and felt more dangerous. And, you know, adrenaline pumping, like everything's going really great. I was really excited by it. And I felt like I was really accomplishing something, like everything Aloy/I had worked towards. Like this was it. This is what I prepared for. And then the final boss battle against the final thing, I was like, I remember it came on screen and I looked at it and I was just like, it's not like it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. It was an iteration without trying to not spoil this for Brittany. It's an iteration of a thing that you have fought before, except its hit points are just a little bit higher. And I was like, okay, so I already know how to defeat this thing. Maybe I defeat this thing. And then the thing I think I'm going to fight is behind it, or like reaching behind it. And the world is counting down and there's a timer and everything's crazy. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to get through this thing. And then I can go fight this thing. And it was too easy. Like the fight was too easy. And I don't think it was because I was OP. I definitely didn't feel like it was me just wailing on it, but I feel like it was too easy and it was super anticlimactic. And then Aloy does what she has to do to end the story. And there's a little cutscene, and the cutscene is literally, the essence of the cutscene is literally everyone going, "Woo, that's over." And then credits roll. And I was like, okay, that's the,
It's so much more than that, though, because I just pulled it up to, like, remind myself of the sequence you're talking about.
Yeah.
And, like, it was such an amazing feeling getting to that point.
It was,
and
but
the credits are so good in that game.
The credits are cool. The credits are really cool.
And there's so much, there's other stuff that happens.
There's two big cutscenes.
I'm like, it's just hard to talk about, because I'm like, I want
to
see
it. It's hard to talk about. So there's two big cutscenes you get rewarded with, one before the credits, one after. The one before the credits moved me. Made me really sad. But I think that sentiment, like that, I loved that sentiment was there, but I didn't feel like I earned it in the final boss battle. I feel like I got an emotional payoff for something I didn't really work for. And then the scene after the credits made me fucking angry.
Hey,
I hated it. I hated it so much. I was like, unnecessary. This is stupid. Like maybe, like, I understand every game wants to leave it open-ended for a sequel maybe or something or whatever, but I saw it and I was like, it felt like it cheapened the ending for me.
Interesting.
And that final boss battle, I feel like was not the challenge that I was expecting for the earth-shattering consequences of everything going on. I feel like it was like, here's the thing you fought before and it's a little bit more difficult. The last part.
That's crazy.
Go play the last part. And I was like, it'll hand your ass to you.
Then I'm totally excited to get my ass handed to me.
I have to say I'm surprised. It's obvious that if you did all of the side content that you were very high powered going into the final fight.
I did most of it.
You can technically like get to the final fight at like level 35.
Right.
And the level cap is 50.
Right.
And I maxed out my level cap and I maxed out my skill tree, really before going into the final boss fight. So I did feel very strong, but I didn't feel like it was an easy fight, especially with all of the different waves. It was challenging, but I didn't want them to successively get more and more difficult. That would have been frustrating.
Right. But like difficulty aside, like I just felt like that, like the last part was not creative, and I felt like for what the game was setting you up to face and what you had to face, the thing that I can't name because of Brittany, I just felt like it was like it felt like a cop out, like that one stretch. Like I remember I was like, oh, it's this thing, and then I get to the and then I get to go and fight the actual thing, and you don't. And I just remember the way that I felt when that battle was over was, and then the end sequence started, was that was it. Like that's what I felt. I was like, that's all? That's it?
But does that taint the entire experience for you?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, but it really disappointed me, because I feel like I was working towards, the thing that I was working towards was not the thing that I was working towards, which is the way that the game presents its narrative and what it presents you with made me think like, and I guess not everyone probably felt that way when they were playing this game, but I felt like that was the thing I was getting ready to beat. And when Aloy is like laying in that bed, like talking to like the people that have passed and talking to like people in her head and like thinking about all that she's seen and all the people that she's like talked to and whatnot. Again, trying to be vague because of Brittany.
You didn't know you're doing real good.
It's a very poignant moment. And like her saying those things, I was like, oh man, yeah, you're going to go fight the really big bad thing. That's like, you know, gonna like could destroy
it's like
the
going
world
into the suicide mission in Mass Effect 2, right?
Right. So it,
which is not a suicide mission and everybody can live.
Right.
Video games.
It might take you 5 playthroughs to make sure everybody you want is alive, but you know, it's okay.
It disappointed me. I thought it would be more creative. And then the first cutscene happened and I was like, oh, okay, everything's good now. And then the post-credits cutscene, which I saw Steimer make a note about in our show notes, fucking infuriated me.
Yeah.
I was mad.
Yeah. I wasn't mad, but I was like,
unnecessary. I was like, this story is beautiful and poignant and it says so much and it doesn't leave a lot unsaid, but what it leaves unsaid is a lot of messaging for like us and a lot of like things that as a player you kind of have to parse through the way that you feel about these themes and these things. And I liked that, and I liked that the way it ended, it didn't like, it's like that's it, like Aloy, you know, Aloy had her story and there's this like beautiful, majestic epic. And I was like, yeah. And then the post-credits scene happened and I was just like, no, you had it. You had it. You had your beautiful little end cap, and then you had to like be like, wait, like scribble something in the end. No.
We're going to have to discuss this further when we can actually discuss it.
Yeah. When Brittany finally finishes it. But I think it's one of the best stories of 2017. Like, I think it's fantastic. I was just a little disappointed in the ending.
Sometimes it's hard to bring it home, you know?
Yeah.
You put so much emphasis on the journey that you don't really stop to think about the destination.
I compared the ending of Horizon Zero Dawn to the ending of Assassin's Creed Syndicate. That really awful boss battle that was like, we have to put a final boss in. Here you go.
Do you, though? No.
You don't have to.
No.
You could be like, surprise, you did all this shit, and you did it. Bye.
You did it. The journey. Thing. Go home. You are home.
Yeah. There's the game idea. The journey was the destination. Ha ha, motherfuckers. We tricked you.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, so you have some homework, Brittany, but did you want to talk about any of these other games on your list? I see you've been playing some Warhammer, and you were playing Octodad.
Yeah, I can touch briefly on these like I did for my 18 games last week. Warhammer End Times Vermintide is like, think of it as a medieval Left 4 Dead. It does some things a little different, but it's a really fun co-op game. The level design is like sex for me because it's super medieval. There's like dungeons and like...
Oh.
Did you say it's like sex for you?
I did.
We gotta...
It's fantastic.
Okay.
We gotta take you...
It's
that good.
I have an idea.
That is a box quote right there.
We gotta take Brittany to medieval times.
Yes.
Oh, please. No, I'm maybe a for all that stuff.
Maybe for our 30th birthdays, which are, you know, like 6 hours apart, we can all just go to medieval times.
Girl, I'm there.
Let's do it.
I am there. Perfect. I will dress I have chainmail. I'll wear my chainmail. It'll be fantastic.
Oh, you have chainmail?
I do. It's hanging in my garage. It's fantastic.
That's amazing.
Yeah, just like that idea.
I'm not surprised.
It's great. Recommend it if you're looking for co-op people. If you have looking for a co-op game, I can't speak. Octodad, Dadliest Catch, I played because I had so much fun with Human Fall Flat and those ragdoll physics that I wanted something kind of similar, and it's co-op, and it's interesting because one person controls the left side of the Octodad's body, and that someone controls the right side, and it's a cluster F, and it's hilarious, and that's all I'll say for now. But those are two co-op games I would recommend. Octodad only if you really like the person you're playing with, otherwise it could get really ugly.
Yeah.
Yes, it can be very frustrating.
It's a good litmus test for a relationship.
Yeah,
you can also play it solo if you have no one to share That's games true. With.
I think you can play with up to four people, actually.
Yeah.
One person is each extremity. Yeah.
That would be nuts.
Yeah.
That's a fight waiting to happen.
That's our next stream.
Like a good Patreon stream.
It is, actually. That's a brilliant idea.
Let's do it. Oh, my gosh. Those streams where all four of us are together, of course, Patreon exclusive rewards. If you guys want to be part of those streams that we do once a month, patreon.com/whatsgoodgames. You can toss us a buck and get in on the happy hour Q&A.
It's so good.
It's for all levels of patrons.
It's so good.
And then we have the special after hours tier that is a little bit more money, but you get a little bit extra, which is pretty awesome. And we love those conversations that we get to have with you guys every month, talking in the chat, playing with you guys. It's one of our highlights. We really, really do love playing with you. So that'll do it for our hands-on segment for this week. Prepare yourselves for the Life is Strange spoiler cast.
Oh, boy.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we will be right back. Welcome back, everybody. It's time for me to show you.
Oh my god.
The Final Fantasy Couple Noodle.
Oh, those are so cool.
Boy. Square Enix, I know you guys listen to this podcast. You sent me two pallets of ramen noodles the month I decide to do a whole 30. Thanks.
It says warm up for battle on it. I'm on Weight Watchers right now.
John and
I are doing it together. And so we scan this in.
It's 10 points.
10 Weight Watchers points.
Is that a lot?
Yes.
Like, yeah, it's like two thirds.
You only get like
half. of yeah. my points?
You only get like 23, 25 like a day. So 10.
Oh. That's half your day?
Yeah.
That's not even going to keep you full for more than an hour.
No. I know. That's why, I mean, that's why they make them that expensive, because they don't want you to eat a lot of them. So technically I can eat, we can eat as many vegetables and fruits and yeah. chicken breasts and fish.
Yeah.
As
all
we
the
want.
Chicken
they're
breasts.
All zero, oh, the chicken they're breasts. All 0 points. But like when you add like oil or condiments or any of that stuff, then.
But not hot sauce. Hot sauce is zero.
Free, yeah.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, we brought them because we have a pallet of them, and I'm going to save some for you ladies when you arrive here in San Francisco. We can all eat them together. And then we will also be gifting some of these.
They have codes. They have codes on them for outfits in Dissidia Final Fantasy NT, which is coming out at the end of the month.
I'm bringing my added big suitcase. MST. So I can bring some home and maybe put them in my Final Fantasy shrine.
Don't
maybe.
Pretend like you're bringing your big suitcase for a cup of noodle. These would fit in a perfectly, relatively good size carry-on bag.
It's an
you just want to
fit. Always bring your
big
suitcase.
Big bag.
Always.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we give Brittany a hard time. We love her, but we give her a hard time because when she flies down here to San Francisco for our monthly shoots, she brings a suitcase that I could fit inside. It is enormous. We're like, you're only
and
here
she's
for
only
2 days.
Here for like a couple days.
Hey, you never know. Something
Throwing
might happen.
Options.
Fallout 5. I'm, you know, like IRL Fallout 5. I might have to stay at Andrea's house for a week. I'm
have
covered.
You seen my closet?
I is
have
that suitcase
of
your
you
bug
wear.
Out bag?
Yeah, kind of.
Just bring.
Oh my God, Brittany.
Okay, just bring it with me everywhere. Just
okay,
in case.
I see you in a zombie apocalypse, like slugging that thing behind you.
Right? Yeah. I'm slowly trying to move in. I'm like leaving like bobby pins and like my toothbrush around, you know, like
true.
It's a slow process, but it's working.
I'm bringing a blow dryer to leave at your house.
Wait, really?
Because I got another one. Oh. I got a really nice one for Christmas, and the other one I had was not really nice too. So I was like, what am I going to do with this? And I'm like, well, I'll just leave it at Andrea's house.
I think I have the one that we use in our bedside drawer. I keep one of her hair dryers. I think it's in there. In my
yeah, no, I had to go find it, but it's my travel one. That one's really great because it's super powerful. Anyway, we digress. Thank you for humoring us. but now, the moment you've been waiting for. I hope that you're caught up. This is your first and only warning for spoilers because we're going to lay it all bare. It's Life is Strange Before the Storm, Episode 3, Hell is Empty.
Whoop, whoop. But before we go to Hell is Empty, we have some Turbo Patrons.
That's right,
that
Stimer.
We would like to talk to.
Stimer.
Say their names.
This is
Say my name.
It's the funny part is that Stimer reminded me at the beginning of the last segment, don't forget we got to do Turbo Patrons this month. And I was like, yeah, we do. We got some new people. And then she was like, but you're going to forget. I'm like, but I wrote it in the show notes.
And you forgot.
I didn't forget. We did it. Simon reminded me.
Just now.
Just now. Just
I got
now.
You.
Let's
okay.
do it.
So Turbo Patrons are a fantastic group of people who are on patreon.com/whatsgoodgames, who are in our comments, who are sending us emails, who are part of our community in a really awesome, meaningful way. We got to meet some of you guys at PSX, which was really cool. People have been asking, are you going to be doing an East Coast meetup? Yes, we will be doing a meetup at PAX East.
Woohoo!
It's still a couple months out, so we don't have any details for you yet, but we are planting that flag. Yes, there will be a What's Good Games meetup of some kind during PAX East, which is April 5th through the 9th, I believe.
It's 4 days, yeah.
Somewhere around there. Yes, 4 days now.
We should probably book our hotel.
Yeah, we'll get on that. But a big shout out and thank you to our Turbo Patrons. I'm going to read all of their names here. As always, if you're new to this list, or even if I've messed up your name in the past, I apologize if I mispronounce your name. Names are hard, guys. All right. Starting at the top, Mr. David Aigolucci, Alex Rigopoulos, Lincoln Davis, Tom Bach, who is a new producer for us. We have one of his special segments coming next week. Stephen Insler, Daniel Raymond George Ralph. Ooh.
Someone
like
named?
I love that name.
That's awesome.
I need your postcard.
Four names.
George, Joe. Joe Schlieff.
Schlieff.
Michelle Villegas. Kathy Lucas. Miss Calf Dog. Kia Bright. Steph Wu. Austin Riley. Dustin Lewis. Tara Bruno.
Tara.
Kyle Heyman. Amar Dillon. Sion Stevenson. Stephen McPherson. Aaron J. Saxon. Tara Waldrop. Benjamin Pardue. Adrian Williams. RJ Bryan. Trevor Starkey. Elle Michelle. Jared Howard, Bass Peterson, Carl Peterson, Molly Bittner.
Molly! Happy belated birthday, Molly!
Yes, she just celebrated her birthday.
Woo!
Giselle Bassa, Bassa? Genevieve Schultz, Muhammad, Nam H. Bowie, Jeff Hutchinson, Tim Ross, Brian Slack, E. Izare, Robert Gerrero, Maddie Stanley, John Drake, Bill Stilwell, Jason Erickson, Sam Baptiste, No Clip, which is Danny O'Dwyer, Adam Rapone, Billy Shibley, Stephanie Fitzwilliams, who had a really weird dream about me that she DM'd me about. It was really funny. It involved like some kind of robot dog. I don't know. Sam, Jason T. Barnes, Harrison Pink, Tommy Larson, Ross Haney, Jessica Salisbury, Nicole Humphrey, Mike Lynch, Brooke Larry, Asia Harrison, Anthony Murphy, Kyle Somerville, Christopher Leone, Oswaldo Sandoval, Ethan Anderson, Sydney Carr, Gio Corsi, Elijah Steele, Marcus Brown, Materia Addict, Yusuf, Annette Gonzalez, Shane Ramu? How do you think you say that?
This is new.
Ramu. Welcome to the Turbo Patrons. I'm sorry I butchered your name.
Please tell us how to pronounce it.
Ozzy Mejia, Christian Rodriguez, Nathan Drake.
What?
Yes. Every month we read his name.
I'm always surprised every month, too.
Troy Spradlin, Louis Creech, Donato Sinicio III, Adam Boys, Tony Hahn, and my mama, Teresa Enert.
Woo.
I don't know why she's always at the bottom. Maybe it's because she signed up first.
Save the best for last.
Yeah.
Oh, it would make sense that she signed up first.
Good old T-Dog.
She's like, oh, my daughter's doing this thing. Let me type it in.
My parents have no idea what I do.
She tells me she listens to the show, but I wonder if she does. Mom, did you hear this? Did you hear me make fun of you?
T-Dog.
I don't think you're ever going to remember this because you don't listen to the show. It's okay. We're a very hardcore video game show. If you don't play video games and you listen to the show, I mean, God love you. I don't know what you're doing here.
Yeah.
We're glad to have you.
They're here for the... No, that's pretty much
for
it.
For the singing.
For the really good songs, yeah.
Yeah, the really good songs.
Exactly. The songs, the video games.
But thank you once again. We say this every month, and I will reiterate that we could not do What's Good Games without the incredible support of not only our Turbo patrons, but all of our patrons at patreon.com/whatsgoodgames. If you guys are ever listening to the show and you think that you could toss a buck our way, we'd greatly appreciate it. Any little bit helps. So you can check those out. Again, patreon.com/whatsgoodgames. So now, without further ado, it's time to start crying.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
I didn't cry.
I teared up real hard. I didn't full on like cry, but I was close. So Brittany, last time you went through the decisions one by one. Did you want to do that again this time?
Absolutely. I have them right here.
Wonderful. So, to recap what happened in episode 1 and 2, we are at a point where we just got some pretty shocking news that we found out this character, Sarah, is Rachel's biological mother. We don't really get a sense of this other woman. Do you guys remember her name?
Rose.
Oh, Rose, yes.
The actual wife?
Like at what point Rose came into the picture. Oh, like how old Rachel was. Like, has she been there since she was a baby? Clearly we learn more about this in the opening moments of this scene. So the first opening scene was something that we didn't see during our playthrough, and I understand now why they held it back. So if you guys remember, we had Ashley Birch and Chris Floyd into the studio here to show us the opening of this episode. And they conveniently left a cutscene out of that demo. So in that demo, we essentially get the story from Rachel's dad about how he and Sarah, you know, met and how they fell in love and how they had this baby and then how she suffered from addiction and that she was like this wild spirit and everybody loved her in high school and very much reminiscent of who Rachel is as a character. But then, you know, he was never going to be enough for her, that her wild, crazy, passionate personality just needed more. And instead of turning to other healthier outlets, she turned to drug use.
Heroin.
Yeah. Needles. We saw. So that's pretty tragic. And essentially the end of that story, that opening scene, ends with him essentially accusing her of caring more about her addiction than about her daughter, which is why he removes her from their home and leaves Sarah, mm-hmm. and then brings us back to present day. So, Britt, what is the first decision?
So the first decision actually doesn't take place until after you have your moment with Rachel in her bedroom. It's when you are back home and you find your room searched. Did you destroy the plant with soda?
Yes.
I did.
Yep, so did I.
R.I.P. plant.
81% of people killed the plant with soda, and 19% of people killed the plant with neglect.
Aww. So the plant dies either way.
Yeah,
it can't save the plant.
To be fair, the prompt said water. It didn't say water with soda.
But so, she was holding a soda can.
You're going to be taking care of the plant when you hit that button, and then she just dumps soda on it, and you're like, girl, what are you doing? Right. Even I know not to do that, and I kill plants all the time.
That was pretty funny.
Timer.
So after that moment, you shower, you dye a strand of your hair blue, and you go downstairs, and there's a scene with Joyce and, God, what's his name?
David
Madsen.
Step douche. And at one point, David offers you a photograph, trying to relate with Chloe and loss and all that. Did you accept David's photograph?
I did.
Of course,
I'm
not a monster.
Yeah.
Are you, though?
Yeah. Well, I was at a point where
love
I was
you.
Like, listen, Chloe, you're being kind of a bitch. You need to take a step in the direction. Clearly, he's making your mom happy. So this decision comes after you see a scene between Joyce and David where they're kind of dancing in the kitchen.
He's making her
music.
Eggs.
He's being real sweet to her.
It's Mother's Day. That's
And you're a terrible child that has done nothing for your
yes.
mother.
Yeah.
And not to say that Chloe obviously doesn't have her issues for obvious reasons, but like she's so mean to her mom because like her mom lost her partner, her husband.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's been tough for Joyce too, and Chloe's just being really insensitive to that.
Right. Yeah. All right.
I want to pick the bone about the fact that.
Do it.
That she just freaking leaves. She's like, it's Mother's Day. I really gotta go, Mom. And like, her mom just lets her go. I'd be like, oh, hell no. Grab you by the ear. You are, like, you're spending the day with me. Like, what do you think you're doing?
Yeah, that's,
I didn't catch that it was Mother's Day. I missed that.
And I know Joyce is trying to create an environment where Chloe feels safe, right? She's like, I want you to come home and I want you to be able to feel like you can just live or whatever. At first I'm like, that's stupid. What the hell is she doing? That mom, blah, 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 blah. But then I realized growing up, I had friends who had parents like that were like, I don't care if you want to smoke weed, if you want to drink, as long as you come home by a certain time. Granted, Chloe never comes home by curfew anyway. But, and I was like, okay, like I can, that's, you know, that's realistic. Parents do parent that way sometimes. That was a little weird though.
That's true. But, my parents were the exact opposite where like we had an alarm on our house. And so you could not sneak out if you tried. You would set the alarm off and. Everyone
Game
would know.
Over.
And this was the cherry on top, was that when I left the house, like, I'm the youngest. When I went off to college, guess what stopped getting set at night?
The alarm.
The alarm.
Oh, that's hilarious. The next choice, fast forwards. Oh, okay. This ultimately, what did you do with Drew's money? That's kind of this statistic here. So 62% of people did not have Drew's money at the start of the day in episode 3. 29% gave Drew's money to Damon. 1% returned Drew's money to him. 4% donated Drew's money to the firefighter fund. And 4% kept Drew's money.
I didn't have the money at the start of the day.
I had it.
I gave the money to Damon in the hallway. because I intervened. I didn't stay in the room with Drew. Or with Mikey, I went out and was like, stop beating him. Here's the money. Go away.
Yeah, I stayed in the room with Mikey.
That's only 29% of people, which is kind of surprising.
I gave it to Damon, but I gave it to him in episode 3 because I stayed with Mikey and because I didn't quite really know how it was gonna shake out, and then I still had the money, and I was like, "Shit, I didn't mean to keep this money. I just have it here."
Did you though?
And then he's a scary drug dealer, so I was like, "Here, take it." I didn't actually. God, take your $1,000 and leave me alone.
So the next decision takes place at the hospital. So a lot happens between then and then. So the next decision is. Did you visit the Norths at the hospital?
Right. So, like, yes. Let's talk about how we end up at the hospital, right? So, mm-hmm. The Norths are there because Mikey's arm got broken in my playthrough.
Yeah.
I believe
Drew's
if you...
knee is busted in mine.
Yeah, because you drew, right?
Drew's knee is busted, yeah.
But you're there because of...
Rachel got stabbed.
Rachel got stabzored.
Yes. So you have this altercation with this drug dealer, Damon. And because what's happening is Chloe is trying to find Sarah so that Rachel can have a reconciliation with her because Rachel's parents have said, don't try to find Sarah. We've kind of exiled her from our life. We don't want her here. Don't go look for her. She's not somebody that needs to be part of your life, is what Rachel's dad has said to her. But
not only
Rachel,
that she's accepted money every month in order to stay away. So he's essentially saying your mother accepted money over seeing you.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he's really kind of set Sarah up as the fall guy, which makes sense. And so Rachel, of course, being a 16-year-old girl who can think for herself, says, like, you don't get to make that decision for me. I want to find her. And so she's asked Chloe, now, Chloe, can you help me do this? And Chloe's like, well, I saw her come out of Frank. So Chloe contacts Frank to be like, well, where is she? And now they're fighting with the drug dealer. That whole interchange was super tense. I did not like it. I did not like how aggressive he was being with such young girls.
Yeah.
They really wrote him and played him as like a really like asshole character. And then he ends up stabbing Rachel. And I'm trying to remember how.
Because she hits him in the head. So what happens is that the turning point where it becomes more violent is Chloe says Rachel's name. And Damon picks up on it and it's like, wait, Rachel Amber, you're the DA's daughter. You're going to give me some dirt on your dad right now. And then obviously they're like, no, fuck you. And Rachel at some point gets fed up. I think Frank is like, Damon, cool off. But Rachel escalates the situation by taking a piece of wood and hitting Damon over the head with it.
Oh, yes, the 2x4.
After he already has shown a giant knife that he has. So obviously he picks up his knife, which I think fell on the ground. And then stabs her in the armpit.
You know, he nicks her artery. Like here. So he nicks a major artery when he cuts her and she starts to bleed out.
Yes. And so you got to get the hell out of Dodge. You put her in, your shitty truck.
Yeah, so Frank pulls off Damon and then you drive with your, like you said, shitty truck to the hospital.
I did like that moment of Chloe fixing the truck up. I thought it was really sweet.
That was cute.
Yeah, that was cute.
That was really cute. Then obviously the Norths are there because they already had their run-in with... Damon themselves. So, did you ladies visit the Norths at the hospital?
Yes.
Yes, of course.
Okay. 72% of people did. 2% did not. I'm assuming that people didn't, like, they just walked too far, then the cutscene ensued, and they're like, whoops.
Yeah.
26% sparred with Drew over pudding.
I didn't get that option.
No.
I didn't either.
I don't know how that even
I didn't try to take, so there's, Drew has the thing of pudding. And I just looked at it and I was like, oh, that looks good. And he's like, yeah, that looks good. Or he's like, yeah, I'm going to eat it.
I didn't even try.
I'm wondering if you kept doing it, maybe you would. I don't know.
I'm not a pudding person, so I just didn't go to the pudding.
I didn't care that much because it didn't look that good to me.
Now I want pudding.
Pudding.
Butterscotch pudding is one of my faves.
Oh, yeah.
Girl, my family makes a butterscotch pudding bar dessert.
what?
This is like
that you're gonna make this.
Oh my god, so North Dakota! I can't even tell you. I'll make it for you guys. I'll get the recipe for my aunt. It'd be great.
Are we cooking again? Let's cook.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Cooking party: ramen noodles and butterscotch bars.
Butterscotch, good. 0% of people played tabletop with Mikey. No, I'm wondering
what?
If that. No, 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 no. I'm wondering,
I didn't get that option.
I'm wondering because I played tabletop with Mikey.
I played,
but what I'm wondering this means is if maybe Drew had been hospitalized, then maybe you had the option to play tabletop with Mikey.
Yeah, if Drew. So when you walk in, if Drew is the one being hospitalized, Mikey and God, I forgot her name.
Steph.
That girl, Steph, are sitting there with the Dungeons and Dragons book open. In his room playing. So I saw that
but
and just
I
didn't
thought
think.
I couldn't do anything with it. Could you, Alexa?
I didn't try.
I did. I was like, oh, I want to like finish her. I want to like be the barbarian.
But you can.
Anytime I hit talk to them, they just like did throwaway lines. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess.
Interesting.
I guess it's time for me to go.
So in my playthrough, Mikey was hospitalized and I got to play D&D, the final round of D&D with Mikey and Steph. And even Drew got in on the action and that was really cute. Aww.
Yeah, it was fun. I died at the end of mine. Did you win or did you lose?
I sacrificed myself in a sense. So there's no stat on this, but in the end what I decided to do, because Mikey had like this bracelet or something that would allow him to like survive the impending final attack that would kill everyone and everything. And I'm like, wear it and I will sacrifice myself. And that's how I died.
That's how I died too, but then Mikey's character died in my playthrough.
Oh, really? Oh, no.
Yeah.
I wonder if you failed the talk back or whatever.
I failed every single talk back. I did not win a single talk back. I did not master that mechanic. I did not understand it. I tried to figure it out, and every talk back in every episode I failed.
I only lost.
I kind of like that idea of Chloe. Like, Chloe's still trying though, like, but she just keeps fucking it up.
So I succeeded my smack talk, so I'm wondering if that's why his character lived. So I was maybe. Just like super encouraging and like super like into it, and I think that's probably why I succeeded.
Maybe. Yeah, like maybe like in the first, like if you, the first game you could be encouraging to him, or you could kind of like be like disinterested, so maybe the stats go back to like how you played the game the first time.
Yeah, I just totally LARPed and I was like, yeah, we can do this, and we did. Well, he did.
I only lost I only lost one talk back in this entire series, and it's the one with Elliot from this episode.
I lost one, and it was the principal in episode one or two.
Oh, yeah,
and I was like, oops.
Lost them all. I'm terrible at talking back. Bad at it.
But you're not in real life. You're really quite good at it.
Oh, thanks.
The next statistic comes from those who donated to the Firefighters Fund. So 95% did not have anything to donate. 1% donated $250. 4% donated $1,000. And 0% donated $1,250.
Wow. I did not have any money to donate. Also, right. I did not see where I was supposed to donate. When this decision came up, I did not know that it was an option.
Yeah, there was the little box in the hospital, which I had no money, so.
Yeah.
I
ain't got nothing for you.
Did you guys listen to what the firefighters were talking about?
Yes. About the fire.
So, yes, but I forgot already.
So the fire.
Oh, yeah,
the
yeah,
firefighters
yeah.
The fire are like, the fire just went out. The fire just, it put itself out. At
right,
the
when
same
Rachel
time,
gets injured severely.
Rachel, yeah, at the same time, Rachel is bleeding out in the hospital. Coincidence?
Yeah. No, clearly not a coincidence.
She is the fire.
So Rachel wakes up and you visit and talk with her. And of course, she still wants to pursue her mother. And she's like, hey, here's where the house key is located. Here's my dad's code to his office. Please go in there and snoop around and see what information you can dig up on my mom. So do we want to talk about that? Because the next decision comes down to who you revealed as the snitch to Damon.
Yes. So in that scene, you do a lot of digging around in the DA's office looking for dirt. I remember looking around and seeing things that I thought were pretty normal. I remember being confused about the choice options, about who you could kind of pin it on.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, like, Sheldon I recognize as, like, the douchebag from the mill. But the other guy, that one guy, I was like, I didn't know who it was. But, like, he's the one who, like, if you read his file, he, like, had in his court testimony, like, confessed to like being a snitch. And so mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well, that's the guy. But then I picked him to be the one that I ratted out to Damon. And then it like turned on me. I got confused.
Did you pick
the guy with like the Hawaiian tattoos or the Samoan tattoos?
No, not the. Because
that's the actual snitch.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. You have to dig around a few times. It's not in the files. It's on the computer.
I must have missed it.
The computer, if you pull up the file, it'll say it's the doorman from the mill. And Chloe has a thing where she's like, oh, it's that guy, but he was really cool to me. So I did not tell him that it was him, and I tried to pin it on someone else.
That's what I did.
What do you mean it turned on you? What happened?
So what's the decision there?
17% convinced Damon that Gerald was the snitch. 53% convinced Damon that Sheldon was the snitch, and 30% revealed to Damon that Thunder. So Thunder is the bouncer. That's the actual snitch. Gerald or Sheldon, who is who? Cause I thought it was just Thunder.
Throwaway characters.
Sheldon is the guy from the first episode that Chloe gets in a fight with at the concert.
But wasn't Frank also an option to convince that he was the snitch?
No.
No, because Frank's not it.
Yeah.
But Frank wasn't a snitch option.
Sheldon is that asshole from the first episode.
Gerald is the guy that I convinced Damon was the snitch. But what happens later is that, like, in the text messages, like, you can read the messages between Damon and this guy. And he's like, no way, dude. It wasn't me. Blah, blah, blah.
That's what I got to.
And I was like, wait.
But I figured, like, of course he's going to say that. What is this? Is a snitch going to be like, oh, yeah, it was me? Like, come on.
That's fair. That's a fair point.
Yeah.
So one of the whole episode, I was a blubbering mess. I cried more during this episode. I mean, I'm talking like tears were in my face. Sometimes my face got a little like contorted because I was trying not to ugly cry. It was very emotional for me. But one of the first things, so I was kind of riding the emotion wave, but one of the first things that really took me out of the experience, I know it's part of the in-game shenanigans, but when you can graffiti the dad's desk,
yeah,
call it like the booze drawer, yeah. I'm like, you know what I mean? I feel like if I was in that room, everything I picked up, I would put back down. I would be wearing gloves because he's a fucking DA. Like, he probably was going to fingerprint all of that stuff.
Yep, you are smarter than Chloe.
And so I was like, really? At that point, I was like, okay, this is just a game. Like, this is just something to mark off, like, on the, like, achievement, the trophy, whatever. That's all. That's, like, one of my only issues.
No, I'm glad you brought this up because I think there was a turning point in the storytelling of the DA at the very beginning of the episode. Because when you are coming out of episode 2, you're thinking, like, when you meet her dad in their house for dinner, you're thinking this guy is like a bona fide asshole, right? Like he's a prick. He's cheating on his wife. He's kissing some random girl in a park. Like, you don't like this guy. And so you come into episode 3 kind of heated about it. And then you get the whole story and you hear about his love and his compassion for his daughter and how he made this tough decision to leave this woman that he obviously cared very deeply for because he knew it was the best thing for his daughter's well-being long term to get her away from an addict as her parent. And like, I feel like it really changed my opinion of him as a character to the point where I was like, okay, I think I can be on your side now. And I just kept having conflicting opinions about like snooping in his office and going against his wishes. I mean, obviously it leads up to what the ultimate decision will be, which we'll get to in a little bit. But like, during that scene, I know exactly the feeling you're talking about, Brittany. It felt wrong that I was graffitiing his desk because I felt like I was on his side now. At that point, I was like, yeah, I'm snooping into your things, but like vandalizing.
Yeah, but then
his
you
desk?
Find. I mean, granted, I agree with you guys. Like, I did think the graffiti there was a little bit much, especially because it's on the. Like, I thought she was gonna draw on the bottle of the sherry bottle, and I was like, that would have been okay. But like, drawing on the desk was like, all right, girl, calm down. But when I feel like it starts to unravel when you're in the office, like his good guy, halo. because you find the letters that he's never given Chloe.
And then...
And you find the voided checks that she's stopped cashing for about a year, I think. So, like, you start to see that, yes, although he had good intentions from the start, it's sort of becoming twisted now into and something more negative.
And then you find, like, the money stash, and then you realize that, like, he's been in cahoots with Damon for... something. Like, I didn't feel like that was entirely explained why the two of them are like have like a why he has a burner phone connected to Damon and the two of them are like in cahoots or whatever, but I just feel like that whole I just feel like that whole like so I never quite trusted him. Like, yeah, like the beginning of the front half of episode three was kind of like, okay, well, he's doing it for his daughter, but like I kind of got a sense that like, okay, if he's willing to like cut this woman out of his daughter's life, like what else is he willing to do? Because he had that, if you snoop around the house at the end of episode two, he has a file with like Sarah and Frank in it, like sitting in his living room. So it's like, what is going on here? So when I found the money and I found the burner and all that other stuff and the evidence, I was just like, yeah, this totally makes sense. Like, it's a crooked DA.
Seriously.
Yep.
I mean, I can I was like, I get it. You want to protect your daughter. Like, sure. But then when I'm like, okay, you're working with like this guy you're trying to catch that you're telling everyone you're working so hard to catch. You want to take care of her. I'm not sure. Obviously, I don't think James wanted Damon to kill off Sarah. I think he just, because he injected her with drugs, right? Isn't that all he did later on in the.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know.
It seems to me like it's. For her father being one of the bigger examples of this, I think one of the messages of Before the Storm in general has been how like good intentions, like intentions that are good and that are and actions that are carried out because you want to protect someone or for the benefit of someone else. Like, you may think like, yes, this is the thing that I have to do to protect this person, but how very easily like the road to hell is paved with good intentions, like how very easily your intentions can warp and how badly those intentions can warp you. Like, I'm thinking about Rachel's dad, but I'm also thinking about like Elliot. That's his name, right?
Yeah.
Elliot.
Oh my God.
Which is the next.
I didn't like that.
This scene, I have not felt so uncomfortable in a scene. So I actually like, was kind of triggered by this scene because I had something similar like this happen to me, like when I was like younger. So this scene made me very, 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 very anxious, but I think it's one of those, like it's one of the scenes in this series, in the Before the Storm series, that I think has probably been more well written. Like, it was very scary. It was very tense. Like Chloe trying to like you have the option, like you, I think you only have like one shot. You can either convince him to be like, hey man, it's okay. You can tell him everything that's going on, which I elected not to do. I don't know if you guys.
Yeah, I didn't tell him anything either.
Because
I was like, number one, the fuck out of my
business. What's the next
I don't
decision?
Care about you. I forgot who you were. And then you showed up at the hospital with this dumb hot dog stuffed animal balloon thing. And I was like, oh yeah, you exist. Bye.
Yeah. And he follows.
And he follows.
So Elliot follows Chloe to Rachel's house, comes into the thing and is like, Chloe, what's going on? I care about you. Tell me what's going on. And if you don't tell him what's going on, he gets violent in a way that's very much like, I care about you more than anyone else. And you owe me. I've given you my emotions. You owe me yours, which is an incredibly scary, incredibly like just like real weird like awful thing that happens. And you can kind of see like in the first episode when he was like, hey, you want to go to the play together, I was like, okay, like this relationship is probably not going to survive the series. And every time you interact with him, Chloe's like, no, I'm sorry, not now. And I was kind of like, I really hope this doesn't come back to bite me in the ass. And I didn't think about it. I was just like, sorry Elliot, not today, bye. And then that scene happened in Rachel's house and I was just like, oh fuck. Like I screwed this up. What are the decisions around that?
So there's no stats on that. Which is
because it's a back talk.
It's a back talk.
Wait, did you fail this too, Andrea? That back talk?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure. You only get one shot. I'm pretty sure I failed every back talk.
So does he like figure it out?
Well, no, he starts asking you questions and you, as Chloe, have some options to get out. You can either try to walk past him, at which point he stands in front of you and then locks the door and turns on the alarm system and is like, no one is leaving this room until you understand what I'm telling you, which is fucking scary.
And then doesn't he shove her?
He shoves her.
The desk, and he's like, why did you make me do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very like super, super toxic masculinity bad. And then you have the opportunity. What I did as Chloe is I secretly dialed, like you dial 911 on the burner phone and you leave it open. And depending on what you say, you're trying to get to alert the person on the phone where you are and what's happening without him figuring it out. And I fucked it up immediately. And he was like, what? And like, it got really violent and bad. And I guess you just like have to leave or whatever, but it was really upsetting.
Oh, I successfully dialed sneak dialed 911. Mm-hmm. And then it ended because we heard the sirens.
Yeah. Same here.
And oh, see, I broke a window.
I broke the window too.
I had to break the window.
But oh, you had sirens show up, Stimer?
Yeah, it's like, woo, woo, police are here. And then I think you kind of go like, oh, you like shove him back in the room and you like run out and you're like, take care of his body.
Oh, just, like, so what happened to me was, I heard the sirens and he's like, cause to win the back talk, I just kind of played like the victim in the sense that I was like, I'm suffering, Elliot, and I need your help. What you blah, blah, blah. And so he's like, Chloe, the sirens are here, but it's okay. I'll take care of everything. We'll be fine. And so I'm just like, okay. And then he opens the door. She opens the door. I can't remember. And then she just kind of like walks past him and sneaks out. And I think he's feeling like, okay, I'm going to take care of this. I'm the big bad guy, blah, blah, blah. And then meanwhile, you make your escape.
So.
And then shove him.
So then.
Well, I can't remember if she shoved him, but I remember like it wasn't a walk out the door. It was like as soon as he opened the door, she kind of bolted and was like, bye. Yeah.
So Brittany, in the final montage that shows the status of all of the characters at the end of the story, what was Elliot doing for you if you kind of got him to think he was saving you?
Oh, I didn't see this.
I didn't see that either.
Because in mine, after I, you know, like broke the window and ran and basically the whole time was like, sorry, dude. The last time you see him, he's packed up his entire dorm room.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
Because he's been kicked out of
Out of school. And he ripped the photo in half.
Freak.
So it sounds like it was the same ending. But yeah, same thing happened.
Being a creeper. Yeah.
Yeah, that was scary. That was a really scary scene.
I'm conflicted about this scene for a couple of reasons. I appreciate that, you know, they are tackling a very like real issue that people go through, but I feel like I got more upset at the fact that they gave so much time in this episode to Elliot, this character who really doesn't play into the narrative, the main narrative that's happening right now. Took this entire scene to just essentially make him a throwaway character. He's been a throwaway character this whole series.
Well, the reason, like, I actually feel like the reason that they did this, because this whole thing sneaks up on you. I don't think anyone really saw this coming. It sneaks up on you. No. It drags on. It's dangerous. It's tense. People who like go off the deep end and like people who like do these things, like nobody ever expects everyone expects everyone to just be a decent human being. If you're friends with someone, like this is a classic example of like Chloe not seeing the warning signs or maybe Elliot not getting the help that he needs. Like these kind of things happen out of the blue. So I can understand why they took a throwaway character and were like, and now this thing is happening because that's how these situations happen. If it had been someone like Nathan, I feel like we would have all expected it because it would have been too neat. It would have been putting a little bow on something and here's more bad behavior from this guy. You expect to have bad behavior. Chloe didn't expect one of her friends to do this to her. So I can see why they wrote it this way and why they structured it this way.
Interesting, because what I was wondering, I mean, that makes sense. I was like, okay, how the hell is Chloe how is she going to get out of here? She's clearly put her fingerprints all over everything. She's drawn on the cabinets, like money is missing and he's a DA. He's going to figure it out. And then when I saw Elliot in there, I'm like, okay, this is really tense. But I was wondering, is this just an easy scapegoat for Chloe? Because they're going to obviously think that Elliot was one who broke in. I mean, assuming they're not going to dust for fingerprints or anything like that. But
I mean, that too.
Maybe he's going to save the situation.
I want to backtrack on a couple interesting things that happened that we didn't talk about. The first one is in the hospital. Did you listen in on the conversation about Nathan Prescott?
No.
Yes.
Oh.
I did not either.
What is it?
Okay. What I remember of it, no, I was a blubbering mess. Was it a psychiatrist that the doctor was trying to convince his father? He's like, hey, basically your son is showing a lot of warning signs. I'm worried that he's mentally ill, like some really bad shit could happen. And the dad's like, my son is totally fine. There's nothing that my son needs. And then they shut the door and you can't hear anymore. But that was some terrible foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Yes.
The other thing in the hospital was when you are playing D&D with Mikey and Drew and Steph as Chloe, there comes a point in my playthrough, and I talked about this earlier, where it's just you and Mikey and you're surrounded by all of this evil, and it's Mikey's like, okay, I can do something, but it's gonna kill me or all of us or you. And Chloe says something, and I can't remember exactly what she said, but it was again like foreshadowing to the end of Life is Strange, where she sacrifices herself for Max for the world essentially. And she's like, hey, you know, if one of us, at least one of us should make it out of here, blah, 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 blah. And like, again, it was much more moving than that, but I would encourage you to go back and watch that, listen to her dialogue during that moment, because it's a gut punch, because it's almost like she knows what's going to happen to her. Granted, she doesn't, but it was a very hard moment.
I definitely need to play this episode again.
Yeah.
The thing that I never cried or was even like close to crying, but it did like give me a sad when Chloe, you're just going to take more than that to, you know, get rid of me. And you're like, all these things about like, oh, we almost lost her, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you guys have no idea. Like,
also like
you're so about to.
Hard.
Also like Rachel's biological mother is addicted to like opiates. And that's what Nathan overdosed her on and killed her on, which is ironic and awful.
Yeah.
Ugh. Okay. So this all takes us to you. After you have this information, you go to the hospital and you can either reveal the truth to Rachel a lot happens. Sorry. You meet up with Sarah and Damon's there at the mill.
At the old, the old burned down mill.
Yeah. And I had the money for Damon. Does everyone have the money for Damon? Yes.
I had given the money to Damon previously in episode two.
The new money. The money from the office.
Yes. I had the money.
The bigger money.
And so what happened in my playthrough, I'm pretty sure it was like the same for everyone. You walk in and Sarah's tied up and Damon's like about to inject her with heroin, I'm assuming. I thought it was like a death drug or something that would like kill her, but
I thought he was going to overdose her on heroin.
That's what I thought too.
And you walk in and you're like, hey, I just gathered up the courage. I have your money. Everything's going to be fine. It doesn't have to go out this way. And you're playing as Chloe, obviously. And obviously that doesn't fly well. And then Frank appears. You see, the last thing you see before Chloe passes out by being hit is basically Frank and Damon fighting and Sarah just kind of slumped over in her desk. Correct? Did I miss any important details?
No.
That is essentially
it.
And then this was weird because you wake up and I thought this was like a dream sequence.
I did too.
Okay.
I was like, this is surely not real.
No.
And she's dead because like, why would you just inject someone with a normal amount of heroin?
Yeah. And she's just sitting there like smoking a cigarette and it's kind of like hazy and there's like echoes, like the things that would make you think like this is a dream sequence.
Right. Similar to the ones with her dad that she's had several times throughout this episode.
Right. And then Chloe and Sarah have a conversation. Sarah's essentially like, please don't tell Rachel that this happened. Please don't tell her, blah, blah, blah. Don't tell her about her father. She deserves to have a good father. She deserves not to have that taken away from her. Please don't tell her anything. Lot. So at this point, which is baffling to me, I thought that I had romanced Rachel because we had talked about it so many times, but clearly I had not because I had Rachel's bracelet. And so at that point, before Sarah was able to walk away, I was able to give her the bracelet.
See, I didn't have the bracelet. No. I didn't have the bracelet from episode two. I didn't.
Because you guys kissed her, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we kissed.
Yeah. So I took her bracelet and I was able to give her the bracelet. And
that's
that ultimately
a shitty thing for them to do to make you to get the better ending where you have the bracelet by not kissing her. That makes me mad.
Wait, how is that the better ending?
Because you get a scene at the end where Rachel meets Sarah.
Only if you have the bracelet.
It's Chloe. So it's Chloe and Rachel on the bench, the iconic bench in Arcadia Bay, and Sarah just kind of like walks out of the woods in a sense, and Rachel's like, ah, and then they hug and they embrace and it's really sweet.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm not.
That's step nine games. That is a dirty. That's a dirty trick. That's a dirty trick.
Yeah,
that makes me upset.
Especially because it's theoretically harder to kiss her than it is to get her bracelet.
It is. It's harder to kiss her.
Anyway,
I worked hard for that fucking action, and now you're gonna punish me.
So
just like real life,
Jesus, just like real life, Slimer.
I don't know if this came. I don't know if this came into play when they were making the decision that the only way Sarah gets to meet Rachel is if you give her the bracelet. But because in Life is Strange, even if you romance Rachel and Before the Storm, you know that relationship's doomed anyway. Because she hooks up with Frank and she hooks up with Mr. Jefferson. I don't know if that came into play there, but anyway, I got that scene in the end. But we're skipping ahead. Did you tell Rachel the truth?
No.
Yes.
Fuck that bitch.
No.
I told her the truth. So
yeah,
it's really close. 49% of people told Rachel the truth. But 51% did not tell Rachel the truth.
Wow, so it's
I'm really mad.
Yeah, that was kind of a hard decision.
I'm really mad.
What happens when you tell her?
When you tell her the
truth? She freaks out.
Yeah.
Yeah, she, there's no words ever really spoken besides you see Chloe starting to say, like, I gotta tell you something. And then it kind of, like, fades out. And
music plays.
Rachel's, like, expressions.
They
like,
talk.
It's incredibly well done. I would encourage that you watch it. And, like, the look that... look of like just pure pissed offness in Rachel's eyes as her dad comes in. It's just like gut-wrenching. They did such a good job at nailing that moment. But I don't think that changes really the ending at all.
Yeah, so before this decision, I left the screen on and I went to the internet and was like, what do I do, internet? I was like, which ending do I pick? Because I kind of knew what I wanted to do, but I wanted to know like what happened. So I'd like looked at the walkthrough of all the different endings, which is how I found out about the bracelet thing. And I knew that I didn't have the bracelet. And I was like, this
Mother
is bullshit.
Fucker.
So I decided to just go with the ending because I like in my mind, I'm like, I knew that Rachel was going to die. And so I was like, I know that she's going to die relatively soon, a couple of years. And so I'm going to spare her. I'm like, it'd be different if I think if I knew that she was going to live or if I had even the perception that she was going to live a long, happy life, that she would eventually find out the truth anyway. And so I would have told her the truth. But I was like, she's only got a couple years left. Let her have some bliss with a happy family and not have the strife and the anguish. And so I didn't tell her.
Yeah, that was kind of my thought, too.
So how'd that scene play out, you two?
There's no point in telling her this. Like, just, yeah, exactly. Like, let her have some moment of happiness. And also, I don't know, I guess the whole time, and especially in this episode, I felt like... I started to dislike Rachel because Rachel to me is what Chloe is in life. And I find this interesting. I think Chloe is probably end up mirroring Rachel's behavior after she dies because Rachel pushes and manipulates Chloe a lot, especially in this episode. Like, oh, please find my mom. Like, ask your fucking dad if you really want to meet her that badly. Like, just ask your father. Eventually, he'll probably get worn down. He'll let you meet her. But instead, like, forcing Chloe to go through all these, like, extremely dangerous. Obviously, she gets stabbed. Like, Rachel gets stabbed in the arm, almost dies. And then she's like, but I still want to find her. So can you go, you know, hang out with the drug dealers again and, like, try and figure this out? I got stabbed, almost fatally stabbed, but, like, you should be fine. Go ahead. And I felt like Chloe does similar stuff to Max in Life is Strange, where she doesn't have a lot of regard for their, like, the other person's life. And like, hey, when a Max uses her power, she has nosebleeds. She's clearly physically affected by this, but keep using them because it's benefiting me and I want to get to the end of this road.
Yeah. Chloe learns that emotional manipulation from Rachel.
Yeah. And so I did find that interesting, but it also made me angry. I was like, evil people.
Right.
I don't like it.
I was so torn with emotions at the end of it because, like, I was mad at Rachel for, like, sending me out, and then I was mad at Sarah for asking me to not tell Rachel. And then at the end of it all, like, without Rachel getting to meet Sarah, like, I think my biggest takeaway and what was, like, really sad for me and like even like seeing them happy was that, like, I didn't get to see enough of them being happy together. I didn't get to see them not in, like, strife. And not, like, I didn't get to see them enjoying each other's company and getting to hang out. Like, that's why I really loved that scene in the junkyard, because it was, like, this one moment where it's, like, they got to share this, like, moment of happiness in, like, an otherwise kind of bleak narrative experience for them. Yeah. And that was tough. How did you guys feel about the ending? Let's the credits sequence aside.
You mean the scene after the credits?
Yeah, before we get there, how did you feel about the way that it ended after you made your big decision?
I'm so fucking mad because I didn't have the fucking bracelet, so I couldn't meet her fucking mom.
So that's part of the reason why I told Rachel the truth was, I'm like, okay, I know this girl only has like, what, 3 more years to live. I'm like, that sucks. Clearly, like, you know, she knows that she just found out that this mom is like a thing that exists that she never knew. And I was like, all right, so if I teach her, if I like tell her like, hey, this is what's going on. Your mom is out there. Your dad's been a shady asshole. I'm like, if I don't tell her that, she's not going to be able to meet her. So I'm like, all right. And I may or may not have looked online and learned that if I
tell I'm not the only one.
Wait, so if you had given her the bracelet but had not protected her, she wouldn't have met her?
I don't know that. The part up was the conversation with Sarah and Chloe, because I thought that was like a dream sequence. So I looked at the spoilers of your decision you make during that, after the scene had already played out. And it said, note that as Sarah leaves, you can give her the bracelet and this will trigger a scene at the end of the game where Rachel gets to meet Sarah. So, I mean, knowing how the game was going to, knowing her fate already, I was pleased with my ending because she did get to meet her mom and that was kind of my ultimate goal. But I knew there wouldn't be a lot of happy people who didn't have the bracelet to give her.
Yep, that was me.
I feel like after Before the Storm, their relationship makes more sense because both of them come from essentially broken homes where they don't trust their parents. So that makes a lot of sense. But unfortunately, it does explain a lot of basically how shitty Chloe is in the main game, because she was emotionally manipulated for so long and now she's pushing these behaviors on Max, but also like her whole support system, which was just this one other girl, is gone. Yeah.
Her dad being such a pillar for her, losing him, and then being like, okay, well, you're sort of a replacement for me, just one person I trust, and then her to have her gone as well.
And that's the other thing about her dad, like the last conversation she has with her ghost dad is her being like, did you ever lie to me? Like, she starts to question whether or not the good relationship she had with her father when he was alive was a lie or not. Like, she starts to question everything, seeing how basically every adult around her is lying or hiding something, or is being manipulated, or like Rachel's mom, just being totally complacent in these awful things that are happening. So Chloe, by the end of this series, doesn't trust anyone. And I think the most upsetting thing, the most upsetting takeaway for this series was not necessarily knowing that Chloe found this person and Rachel's going to die, but like just how shaken Chloe's faith was in literally everybody. The fact that she's questioning her memories with her father, who we've up till now seen like her father was her rock. Like she loved her father. Like his death completely broke her, and having her go back being like, well, did I have the kind of relationship I thought I had? Just crushed me.
I also think, though, that Chloe doesn't give Joyce enough credit. Like, they've never set Joyce up as anything other than a dedicated, loving mother. And no matter what she does, Chloe just continues to push her away. And that is incredibly frustrating for me, because I see, you know, parallels to people that I know in, like, real life and, like, having these situations. You know, and I'm just like, but like Joyce is there, and like this idea that Chloe is perpetually alone, that she lost her dad and lost Rachel and lost Max. Like, no, Joyce is desperately trying to be there for her, and she just keeps pushing her away, and that made me so angry. I'm like, don't do that to your moms, everybody. Your moms want to be in your life. Let them. be there. Call your mom tonight after you listen to the podcast.
Oh my God. I finished this episode when I was home in Connecticut. And after I finished it, I like wandered out to the living room where like my dad was watching TV and I was just like, hi dad. And he was like, did you play something sad? And I'm like, yeah.
That's so funny.
There was
funny
a dad in it.
I called like, my mom after I finished that episode and she doesn't know shit about games, you know, but she acts very interested like a good mom. And I'm like telling her all this backstory. I talk about 25 minutes about Life is Strange and this game and how it affected me. And she's like, oh wow, honey. Oh wow. Well, she's like, go have some whiskey and go sit in the hot tub and just, you know, like calm down. I was like, okay. But
that's
it's
amazing.
True. God, the scenes with her dad wrecked me every time. Just an emotional, very like visceral episode. It was, there's nothing good happened in this episode except for when she met her mom. Mm-hmm. That was just in my place.
Except that didn't happen for three quarters of us.
So the final statistic is 88% of people, for 88% of people, Rachel did not meet her mom and only 12% met her mother.
That to me is a giant fuck up.
That is a fuck up.
I love this game and I like Deck Nine a lot, but to me, when you have a choice like that, that's so one-sided. And when I played, it was 91-9. Like 91% of people had not met her. And I'm like, that to me means that something in your pathing, in your narrative's branching, you fucked up somewhere.
Right. Also, that's not fair to tell players that you have to work hard to get the kiss in episode two. But if you work hard to get that thing in episode two, you still can't get the thing in episode three. That is not fair.
And it doesn't make sense.
No.
I mean, I feel like, because I have the bracelet, I feel like if I was like Rachel's girlfriend, I could be like, Sarah, Rachel is like a beautiful person. I love her so much. Here's a photo we took of each other or something that would keep the wheels turning in Sarah's head. So I understand your frustration. It just seems odd.
Yeah. It was a frustrating choice for
I'm
me as
really
a player
mad.
That not only did I not know the significance of the bracelet in the moment, but that they would lock off such a huge, impactful choice behind something in a previous episode so that I'm forced to go back and replay not just episode three, but I had to replay episode potentially one and two to make sure that I have the right choices lined up to be able to get the bracelet instead of the other option. And it was tough, but I will say, as tough as that was, not getting to have that moment with Rachel and Sarah, that post-credit scene was
unnecessary.
Devastating. I don't think it was unnecessary. I think we talked about this in our last spoiler cast, that we were like, how are they going to connect it? How are they going to get from where we are in episode two to like what we know happens in Life is Strange?
Oh my God. It just hurt. It just hurt.
I apparently missed this. I need to go on YouTube and watch it.
Oh, you
Because what happened was I was playing this game and I had a presentation early in the morning. And so as soon as it was over, I was like, I have to go to bed. It's past midnight. So I like put the PS4 in sleep mode, forgot that there would be an end credit scene and went to bed because I had to. And then I'm like, oh shit, there probably was an end credit scene.
You should watch it. But for people who are in your position that also didn't watch it, I'm going to describe it. Essentially, it's a scene where it kind of like fades up and, we see a phone that's like vibrating silently, like someone's trying to call.
It says Chloe calling.
17 missed calls.
And we're in the basement in the dark room and you can see like the camera flash. You can like hear the pop of the camera flash in the background. And it's like the phone is just ringing. It's like missed calls, Chloe calling. And it's like,
that
it like fucking
me.
Pulled at me in such a way that it made me just like hurt.
I was like, no. I don't think I've ever gasped. Like I knew something was coming. No one had spoiled it for me, but I had seen people say like, oh my God, that post-credit scene, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, crap. I knew it was going to be a gut puncher anyway without reading those. So I had played through and I had to break the game up in two parts because the third episode, because it was too emotional for me. So I stepped away. I come back. I wrap it up. I'm watching the credits. Then Jason and Reb like walk in. They're like, hey, what are you doing? And I'm all like pinky puff eyed and I'm sitting there and I'm like, I love you, but can you just please like leave the room for
not
a few minutes?
Right now.
And I'm like, because I have a feeling I'm about to have a moment. So they left and I'm like, okay, what's it going to be? I thought it would maybe show like a Chloe posting wanted photos of missing photos of Rachel, you know, like the flyers or whatnot.
Yeah.
And then when I heard like the vibrating and the, I literally like put my hands over my head like this and I gasped so loud and my face contorted and it scrunched and I just started ugly crying. It wrecked me.
Like you, I was expecting like her putting up posters or her being missing or something, but I feel like showing that image, like actually in the dark room, like maybe in the moment that she fucking dies, like is real. It was too close. Like it was just too close.
No, I think it was a smart move because I feel like in Life is Strange, Rachel is such an aloof character that she's so untouchable that you don't really know who she is. You have no connection to her. And then even when you find out, when Chloe finds out that, you know, like the body that they found is Rachel in the junkyard, it doesn't have that same weight that it does now that we've met Rachel, that we've seen Rachel, that we've seen this relationship between Chloe and Rachel. And like what happens to her and how she's brutalized, I feel like is so much more impactful now knowing who she is as a person instead of her just being like a Jane Doe, you know, like, you know, and that's, I think, why that scene was important to be like, this terrible fucking thing happens to this beautiful person who has this really unique relationship with this protagonist. And I think they tied it together in a way that they needed to without overstating it. No?
No.
So sad.
I know. No, no doubt. Like, it's sad. It's tragic. And, like, it reminds me how, I don't know if I'd go as far as saying that Don't Nod jumped the shark in, like, episode 5 and, like, went off the deep end with what was happening in that story.
Oh, no. And that, like, Twin Peaks nightmare world? Yes, that was a shark. That was several sharks jumping all at once.
But I feel like the work that the Deck Nine did kind of brought a little bit more legitimacy to that crazy story of this professor turned like pedophile photographer guy doing like rapey things in his basement. Mm-hmm. You know, like that whole thing felt a little bit far fetched, a little bit too like Law and Order SVU for me.
A little bit too Twin Peaks. Yes.
But with the way that they set it up now, you know, like it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking what happens to her.
I went back and watched the scene where they discover Rachel's body again. I read some Wikipedia entries. Basically, every time that Rachel is mentioned, I went through and like read that instance for Life is Strange. And now, yeah, like you said, Andrea, having that perspective, it's like, oh, like when Max finds that letter to Chloe where she's essentially saying she's found someone who's completely changed her life. She's talking about Jefferson. You know, every time you see the doe, that's a symbol of Rachel. And it's just like, oh, God, I want to play it again. But I'm a little... Now, I know 3 years passed between Before the Storm and Life is Strange, but I'm worried, like, seeing the characters that I feel like have been evolved in Before the Storm and then seeing them in Life is Strange, I don't know if that would dampen my experience. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I was hoping that there was going to maybe be a moment between Rachel and Frank that set up their ultimate friendship or potentially more than a friendship down the line. Because obviously in Life is Strange, you know, you find the photos of Frank and Rachel together and it indicates that they have some kind of a close relationship, if not a romantic. I assumed it was a romantic relationship.
It is, yeah.
And so clearly, like, if you are, even if you're good friends, if not, you know, like more than friends with Rachel at the end of this, she clearly leaves Chloe romantically between now and her death. Cause she also, you know, like is hanging out with Nathan and, there's certainly a lot that happens in those 3 years and I mean, that's life. Life can change really dramatically.
Life, you might say, is strange.
That was great.
It is. But yeah, I was kind of hoping to see a little bit of, like, even of just like a one liner or something that like opened the door for what's going to happen with Chloe and Frank. But
with Rachel and Frank.
Yes. Sorry. Rachel and Frank.
Yeah. Because that is a good point. Cause I mean, Chloe is the only one who really interacts with him throughout the whole thing.
But somewhere along the line, like, Rachel, you know, does a lot of drugs and she ends up with Frank and then Mr. Jefferson and it's like, huh?
I don't know if she does a lot of drugs so much. Like, I got the impression he would just drug them during the sessions.
No, I'm talking when she was with Frank because I think it's, is it Nathan? someone somewhere suggests that Rachel's only with the Frank for the ease of drugs and for the for the access to drugs. But
I didn't.
Yeah, it makes me feel even sadder for like knowing that, because she does still talk. Like, she never talks about her in a way that would suggest that she would be like, that she would know that all this is going on behind her back. Meaning, like, to me, I think Chloe thought they were still in a relationship that entire time. Just the way she spoke of her. So then it kind of makes me, like, mad at Rachel even more that she would manipulate this person that she claims to care about and claims to be, like, the only one who understands her and all of these things, but will go behind her back and sleep with Frank and, like, you know, whatever, do all this weird shit with Mr. Jefferson, which, by the way, is not a great idea.
No. Mr. Jefferson didn't see that coming. I didn't.
No, I didn't either. I live streamed those episodes, and my face at the end of that reveal was like, oh, like, I just like freaked out. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That guy? That fucking guy?
Man, so many emotions going through me right now.
All of the shots.
So we still have to check out Farewell, which is the little mini episode with Max and Chloe, with the original voice actresses returning to reprise their roles. I would say we could probably also do a spoiler cast about that. I don't think it's going to be nearly as revelatory as clearly these three episodes have been. But any parting thoughts, ladies, on Life is Strange Before the Storm as a whole?
I do find it interesting that, I think just something that we've kind of already stated, but to retroactively feel bad about a game I already played, like, if that makes sense, like, I didn't care that much about Rachel in the first instance. Like, it was a sad storyline, but you're like mostly sad just because the world is fucked up. And now you're like, oh, you've given me context in a way that it changes a thing that I played before, but also doesn't make me want to go back and play that thing. Like, I'm fine with the way that it happened, but
yeah, I think Deck Nine did a real, I don't know how the development process went. I don't know if they talked with Dotnod. I was like, do you have story for this?
They did.
They did. Okay.
They worked with Dotnod.
A phenomenal job. And this is by far, it's been like the most emotional game I've ever played. And it felt so visceral and so real for me, because every character that you meet, I feel like I knew that person in high school. So it really connected with me. It was just very well done.
I felt like the writing was really, really strong. Like, I actually liked Before the Storm a lot better than the original Life is Strange.
Hello.
No, I thought the writing was really strong. I thought that they did a really good job making small, mundane things or normal things seem really impactful and really, like, I had a lot of anxiety playing this game, which means the decisions were tough. So, yeah.
Yeah, the relationships felt real. The decisions felt based and grounded in reality. I agree that it felt like it had a more natural flow overall than Life is Strange did. And I think that is also a testament to that they kept it to three episodes instead of trying to stretch out certain story points into five episodes. I think the original Life is Strange could have probably benefited from being four episodes maybe instead of five. But overall, like, I named it as one of my top 10 games of 2017. Really excellently done. At this point, if you're still listening to us and you haven't played this game, I don't know what you're doing, but really excellent. And I can see myself playing through this again and picking different choices and seeing all the different cutscenes and the way that it played out. But it's rare that a video game makes you feel something so viscerally as Life is Strange did. And so for that, hats off to both Deck Nine and Square Enix for believing in this franchise, and for all the people out there who we met at PAX when we did our Life is Strange event at PAX West, who talked about how this series meant something to them. It was really great working with Square on this project, and I'm kind of sad to see it end. But the good news,
there's a sequel coming.
Life is Strange 2 is happening. Yeah. We have no idea who's going to be in that game, but maybe we'll find out at E3 this year.
Oh, boy.
Fingers crossed.
Would you ladies, okay, quick question. So now that we've played Before the Storm without any, like, supernatural elements, and we played Life is Strange with sort of supernatural elements, would you want Life is Strange 2 to have those or to not have those, or do you care?
I hope it doesn't have them because now they feel gimmicky now that I've played Before the Storm. Mm.
I feel like if they can tie it in narratively where it makes sense, like they did with Life is Strange, and have it not feel gimmicky, then I'm down. I'm into it. But
yeah,
I don't need it.
They can do so. Before the Storm has supernatural elements to it, but they're just not playable. Like the fire, basically, it's more symbolic than anything. So I think just so long as they have some element, they can do whatever they want with it. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for hanging with us through this spoiler cast of Hell is Empty, episode 3 of Life is Strange. We will be back next week with more video game commentary, analysis, and hopefully some funny stuff.
Yay.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We hope you have a fantastic weekend. If you would like, please reach out. Let us know your thoughts about the spoiler cast in the comments below. We love you all. Good night.